A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, in a black-and-white film, credits appear. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents Norma Shearer, Joan Crawford, Rosalind Russell in The Women, as presented for 666 performances in its triumphant run at the Ethel Barrymore Theater, New York. Copyright 1939. This program has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding from the U.S. Department of Education, described by Justin Soule and Dutch Priest, read by Pat Lentz. For more about description, call DVS at 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website, access.wgbh.org, with Mary Boland, Paulette Goddard, Phyllis Pova, Joan Fontaine, Virginia Wheedler, Lucille Watson. From the play by Claire Booth, by arrangement with Max Gordon Plays and Pictures Corporation. Screenplay by Anita Luce and Jane Murfin. Musical score by Edward Ward and David Snell. Recording director Douglas Shearer. Art director Cedric Gibbons. Gowns and fashion show by Adrian. Hairstylist Sidney Guleroff. Color sequence in Technicolor, produced by Hunt Stromberg, directed by George Cukor. Now, more credits appear around cameo images. The first shows a deer grazing in a meadow. Norma Shearer as Mrs. Stephen Haynes, Mary. The deer becomes a smiling, dark-haired woman. Now, a leopard sits panting in the jungle. Joan Crawford is Crystal Allen. The leopard becomes a smirking woman with high cheekbones. Now, a black cat bares its fangs. Rosalind Russell as Mrs. Howard Fowler, Sylvia. The cat becomes a grinning woman in a bonnet. Now, a monkey makes faces. Mary Boland as the Countess de Lave, Flora. The monkey becomes a plump, middle-aged woman wearing a high fur collar. Now, a fox licks its lips. Paulette Goddard as Miriam Ahrens. The fox becomes a woman with wavy, shoulder-length hair and short, dark bangs. Now, a lamb looks up from its grazing. Joan Fontaine as Mrs. John Day, Peggy. The lamb becomes a woman with a bow in her light, curly hair. Now, an owl's feathers billow in the wind. Lucille Watson as Mrs. Moorhead. The owl becomes a matronly woman with raised eyebrows who cocks her head and grins. Now, a cow chews on its cud. Phyllis Pova as Mrs. Phelps Potter, Edith. The cow becomes a full-faced woman chewing gum. Now, a yearling glances about through big, dark eyes. Virginia Wheedler as Little Mary. The yearling becomes a 10-year-old girl with a ribbon tied in her long, dark hair. Now, a horse opens its mouth wide. Marjorie Main as Lucy. The horse becomes a yawning, middle-aged woman. More credits. Anne Virginia Gray, Ruth Hussey, Muriel Hutchison, Hedda Hopper, Florence Nash, Cora Witherspoon, Anne Morris, Denny Moore, Mary Cecil, Mary Beth Hughes. Now, a leashed terrier walks down a sidewalk. The terrier and a pug lunge at each other, snapping in front of the entrance to Park Avenue, Sydney's salon. The terrier's owner carries it into the salon's kennel room.
But you need some perfume on your friend.
Oh, good morning, Olive. Oh, good grief. Wouldn't you think women would leave beasts like that at home? Oh, but my little Lillikins is different. Yes. She's our mother's little playmate. Now, Olive, here's her special drinking water.
But she don't ever want to drink, Miss Van.
Ah, but you never can tell. Someday she may. Oh, she cries for me, Olive. Just tell her that Muddy's making herself look perfectly beautiful just to play with little Lillikins.
At the reception desk.
Carter and I being got together. Is she here yet?
Oh, yes. You're going to have a manicure, shampoo, facial, and everything.
Later.
Oh, look at Sydney's miniature.
Miniature? Sure sign of a pretty mind.
They've been waiting half an hour, Mrs. Spencer. Would you mind seeing the art exhibit later?
Oh, all right. Art exhibit, my foot.
Will you please remove your hat?
Yes, Spencer.
Here, Mrs. Spencer.
Oh, Mrs. Connor inspects her friend's face through a magnifying lens.
Let me see.
Good grief. I hate to tell you, dear, but your skin makes the Rocky Mountains look like chiffon velvet.
A nurse checks on a woman inhaling through long tubes.
Only half a minute more, Mrs. Miller, and you can talk again.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm looking for Grandma.
In the next room, a woman takes a mud bath.
Well, she isn't in here. Oh, this mud has worms in it. I know it has worms in it. I can feel them.
They're probably more scared of you than you are of them.
Well, what's in a little worm, Whitehall? And yell, they eat them.
Relax. in a massage room.
Rest and close your eyes.
All right, all right. But I still say I'm going to pull a gun on that guy, just like I did on Judge McClure.
In a tanning room.
I'm coming. Oh, my dears, just think that solid mountain of flesh is going to marry a jockey. Won't her husband fairly turn over in his grave? Now, what's she got in common with a jockey?
Horse feathers.
A photographer enters an exercise room.
Yes, miss? Oh, well, she's all right, Miss Spencer. She's my press agent.
Has anybody seen my grandmother? She's sobbing.
The photographer snaps a photo.
Sobbing's in that direction. Oh,
in the next room, an elderly woman rides an exercise bike.
Well, Grandma!
Hello, Dolly.
Where have you been?
4 miles.
May I go to the bike tonight?
Not without me.
Oh,
a woman heads into the next room. Separated by curtains, three women receive facials. A beautician turns from the last woman to an adjacent kitchen.
Oh, why, well, you don't look a day over 35. That old gasoline cup, she's 60, she's a minute.
Who is she?
Gillings Water.
Oh, that old bag. One more permanent, you won't have a hair on her head.
Mm, she's got plenty on her arms, baby.
She showed us she had.
Elsewhere.
The newest color, Mrs. Fowler, Jungle Red.
Huh?
The newest color, Jungle Red.
Oh, yeah.
We heard her tell his name, which one of the girls recognized when Charlie Maple bought this collar, man. It was Haynes.
What? What'd you say the name was?
Haynes.
Well, how do you know? When'd you hear?
A couple weeks ago, I paid $5.50 to Mrs. Haynes.
Sylvia Fowler holds out her dome hair dryer's power switch to her manicurist.
Shut the door. I can't hear a thing. Hazel, please get the pins out of here. I want to get out.
Later, Sylvia dials a payphone, now at the home of the full-faced Edith Potter.
Bye, Mama dear.
Don't frighten Mama dear.
Run along, darling. Run along.
Oh, the lamb. Are you sure they're dressed warmly enough? Yes, hello?
Edith, take a good grip on yourself. You're going to die. Stephen Haynes is stepping out on Mary.
What?
All aboard for the man, Mary!
Yes, see, you've got it long now, gentlemen. But Sylvia, darling, who told you? A manicurist? Well, go on.
Well, this manicure, she's perfectly divine. She said to me, I know something about that awfully rich Mrs. Haynes.
Oh?
Suppose Mary should hear about it. Wouldn't it be terrible? Wouldn't it be ghastly?
But darling, we've got to face her at lunch today.
Wouldn't it be too tragic? Eating her food and knowing all about her husband.
Well, darling, I'll burst until I get the details, but I've got to see that filthy doctor. He should have a regular checkup. Well, goodbye, darling.
Edith hangs up, then turns the phone's rotary dial.
Madam, will you tone her down? This is a toll call.
Hello? Hello, this is Mrs. Potter speaking. Will you tell Mrs. Haynes not to wait lunch for me? No, tell her I have to see my doctor, but I'll make it just as soon as I can.
Mrs. Haynes is out riding now with little Mary, but I'll let her know.
Now, outside on the Haynes estate, two dogs chase after little Mary on her horse. Mrs. Haynes follows on her own horse.
Mother, will you tell Daddy I beat you? Will you tell him?
If I tell him, he'll think I'm conceited.
He'll be awfully disappointed in me.
Oh, but you're so solid with him anyway.
Oh, you think so? All right, I'll tell him. And just to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt, I'll photograph the finish.
Oh, swell!
Little Mary rides past a gazebo as her mother stands with a film camera.
Lickety split now! It's gonna look like the real McCoy!
All right, Mother, here I come!
Mary Haynes films her daughter as she rides over a line painted on the lawn and raises her hand victoriously. Later.
I think I need to borrow your horse the next time.
Oh, I could beat you with any horse.
Oh, you could.
Let me take it now, Mother.
As little Mary takes the camera, a dog jumps into Mary's arms.
Look at that one.
Mary prances forward, holding the dog in one arm.
Look out there. You're shooting us on the bias.
Oh, I meant to. That's autistic.
That won't impress Daddy. You've heard that one before.
Mary bends over and looks back between her legs.
How's this for autistic?
That's swell. Hold it. Still.
Little Mary leaps on her mother and knocks her down. The two get up and head inside to the kitchen.
My goodness, what a racket! If this was an angel cake, it would fall like a board. Any sensational ideas about dessert tonight, Ingrid? Baked apples?
What?
Oh. No, Charlotte Russe. Well, you never eat it, and he shouldn't.
Why shouldn't he?
Because he sits in an office all day, and most every night, too, lately.
Well, that's why he should be pampered. It's our last dinner at home. We're going to be up in Canada there for 2 weeks, living like pioneers. I better do the cooking myself so you know what he'll get.
I know. Indigestion.
You can't fool me. Why, you'll cook for him like a French chef all the time you're away. I was looking for my cookbook this morning, and I found it in your trunk.
I'll bring it back.
I hope. Well, what kind of goo do you want for him tonight?
Pancakes, Barbara.
Oh, ridiculous. 20 pounds. Right.
Oh, come on.
All right, if you say so. But that Adonis figure of his won't last forever without a little help from the kitchen.
Mary heads out. While removing her riding jacket, she runs through a living room and up a flight of stairs. She drops the jacket on a chair, then enters a bathroom. She turns on the shower.
For you.
Later.
Sheba, get off of Daddy's coat.
She pulls a jacket out from underneath the dog.
You don't want to take this old thing along with Daddy's, do you?
What old thing, dear?
This.
That old thing. What do you mean, old thing?
Daddy never wears that coat.
Oh, yes, he does. Whenever we go away on trips together, hunting and fishing.
Little Mary leafs through photos.
Excuse me. Can I follow him in here?
Mary wraps her arms around her daughter and leans in close to see the pictures.
Oh. You know, we took those on our honeymoon.
You did? Where was your honeymoon?
Up in Canada. Where are we going tomorrow?
Sheba, the dog, pokes her head in near theirs. Mary points to one of the photos.
Do you know, that's the spot where I caught that famous fish.
A tiny fish is mounted on the wall.
It isn't such a big fish, though, is it, Mother?
Well, the big fish aren't always the most important, you know. When I first married Daddy, I couldn't fish with a cent. He started to teach me. The first thing I learned was how to cast a fly. And then I caught that fish.
And Daddy said he'd have to have it stuffed.
In case I might not ever catch another.
Mary picks up a pipe rack.
Oh, but you do catch others.
Oh, millions of them. As a matter of fact, it's only Nip and Tuck now who makes the biggest catch, Daddy or me.
Does it make Daddy jealous?
Furious. We have terrific battles. Oh,
little Mary pulls her down to the couch.
Where's Daddy in this one?
He's probably taking the picture.
Oh, I see a shadow. Look, there in the snow.
That's right. Oh, I remember that morning. It snowed unexpectedly during the night, and we had to dig our way out of the cabin. We were snowbound for 2 whole days.
Like in a movie?
Yes, darling.
Were your lives in danger?
Mary pulls an unlit pipe from her mouth.
Well, hardly. But it was very romantic anyway.
I think that kind of lovey-dovey stuff is sort of silly,
Oh,
Mother.
You do? Hmm? Well, what do you know about it anyway?
She rests her head on her daughter's lap.
Mother? Mm-hmm. What do you and Daddy talk about when I'm not around?
Oh, I don't know. Everything.
Do an awful lot of laughing.
Do we?
I hear you sometimes.
You shouldn't be listening.
What do you laugh at?
Oh, little jokes. Lots of things.
Do you love Daddy better than me?
What?
Mary looks up.
I never gave you such an idea.
Ingrid says you love him better than anyone.
Oh, well, that's a different kind of love. You'll find out when you grow up.
Will I?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I do, I hope that I won't think it's silly.
Mrs. Haynes, the lunch guest has started to arrive.
Mother, let me pick out your dress for you. You won't be so fancy. Why don't you be plain?
All right, let's hurry.
Downstairs.
Oh, how do you do, Mrs. Potter?
Hello, Jane.
And how are you feeling today?
Too awful. I wouldn't wish my woes on my worst friend.
Edith peers around the corner.
Oh, Jane. Will you tell Mrs. Fowler that I'd like to speak to her out here for just a moment?
Yes, Mrs.
Another woman approaches.
How's the little mother? Jane, never mind about that.
Hello, dear.
The spider's in the parlor. Let's go join her.
In the parlor.
Oh, I said, Howard, what do you expect me to do? Stay at home and darn your socks? What have we all got money for? Why do we keep serving?
You don't.
Sylvia's bodice has three plastic eyes.
Guns, what are you made up for? The seeing eye?
Better save your cracks for your next book, dear. Well, Edith, you must have done.
I broke every speed record.
The writer listens in on Sylvia and Edith's chat. The two women eye her and separate.
I forget to shoot. As soon as my book's out.
I don't blame you. I'd rather face a tiger any day than the sort of things the critics said about your last book.
Oh, isn't this divine of Mary and the little girl?
Sylvia takes a newspaper from Peggy Day.
Leave it to Mary to see if she's photographed from her best angle.
Is that so?
What are you going to write next, Nancy? Animal stories?
I wouldn't have to go to Africa for that.
Ha, ha. Oh, I wish I could make a little money writing the way you do.
If you wrote the way I do, that's just what you'd make.
You're not a very popular author, are you, dear?
Not with you. Best angle, my foot. It doesn't have to do it justice.
You have some sherry on it?
I'll take it. Peggy never seems to connect very well.
I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Let me see. She's in love, bless her. I
after the child's been married as long as you girls, she may be able to concentrate on vital matters like cocktails.
Oh, another lecture on the modern woman.
At the drop of a hat.
I consider myself a perfectly good wife, Nancy. I've sacrificed a lot for Howard Fowler. Smoked oysters.
Oh, don't mention smoked oysters. They turn the emerald green.
Oh, Edith, you are a bore.
Lay off my reputation, girls, while I unswallow.
Please.
As Edith runs off, Peggy looks at the paper again.
Oh, isn't little Mary a dream? Oh, I wish I could afford to have a baby.
You never will if your bridge game doesn't improve.
I'm devoted to Edith Potter, but she does get me down. I don't blame her husband for being bored with her.
Why, what makes you think that Mr. Potter...
Oh, my dear, he's one of those flirty types, you know, just loves to kiss all the girls. I told him off one time. I said, look here, Phelps Potter, just one more of those little snacks and I'll go straight to Edith.
And did you?
Of course not. I'd die before I'd hurt Edith.
Nuts.
Nancy extends a bowl.
Thanks, dear. Well, heaven be praised, I'm on to my husband. I wouldn't trust him on Alcatraz, the mouse.
Sylvia, you oughtn't to talk about him like that. Why, I think it's disloyal.
Oh, now listen, Peggy. Do we know how the men talk about us when we're not around?
I've heard rumors.
Exactly. And, while we're on the subject, have either of you wondered whether the master of this maison might not be strange?
I haven't.
Well, for all you know, Mary Haynes may be living in a fool's paradise.
You're so resourceful, darling. I ought to go to you for plots.
You ought to go to someone.
Edith returns.
Oh, hello over there.
Yeah, that was a false alarm.
Have you finished with me?
Long ago. We're on our hostess.
I think Mary is being very wise, snatching Stephen Haynes off to Canada.
You just can't bear Mary's happiness, can you, Sylvia? It gets you down.
Well, how ridiculous. Why should it?
Because she's contented. Contented to be what she is.
Which is what?
A woman.
And what are we?
Females.
Really? And what are you, Pet?
What nature abhors, I'm an old maid, a frozen asset.
Well, come on, Sylvia. Let's see what keeping Mary.
Come along, children.
In the bathroom.
I never get you alone. I can't wait to get the lowdown.
You're going to swoon, my dear, when I tell you.
You know, I go to Sydney's for my hair. Well, you ought to go, Pet. I despise whoever does yours.
No, it looks awful, but never mind. Hurry up.
So this manicurist, Olga, is arrived. Isn't that divine jungle red?
Simply divine. Go on.
Well, I was looking through Vogue, the one with Mary in the Bozarts ball costume.
You mean that one in the white wig that flatters
yes,
so much?
Yes, that's the one. That's what started this girl on Mary, and the whole ghastly story rolled out.
Yes, but is it someone we know?
No, that's what's so awful about it. She sells perfume at Black's Fifth Avenue.
Black's?
Oh, oh, it wouldn't be so bad if Stephen had picked somebody from his own class, but a Basil.
Yes, but how did Stephen ever meet a girl like
that? Oh, how do men ever meet girls like that? That's all they live for, the rats.
Oh, you know, somebody ought to shut that manicurist up.
A good piece of scandal like that, not a chance. Give me the soap. Why, that girl never stops talking. You know how those creatures are. Babble, 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 babble. Never let up for a minute. A lot they care whose lives they ruin. 10 cents a cake. Well, of course, it's all right to be homespun in the country, but really.
Isn't it a dirty trick?
Isn't it foul?
Oh, cheap Chinese embroidery. You know, I'll bet Peggy gave her these.
It wouldn't be so bad if only Mary's friends knew. We could keep our mouths shut.
I know plenty I'd ever breathe about my friend's husband.
Oh, so do I.
Sylvia and Edith exchange a glance.
Well, you know, I adore Mary.
I worship her, my dear. We're not only cousins. She's my very dearest friend in all the world. After all, we were raised together. Oh, Edith, I forgot to say that.
Bring it up, girl. Bring it up.
Mary enters.
Hello.
Liv, I could kiss you. You don't have to. The diet I'm on is pure poison.
How can you exercise all day and look so contented, dear?
Oh, just a trick I learned from the cows.
Sorry to be late, girl.
It's all right, Mary. We haven't had a dull moment. Well, old Sylvia, feeling better?
Meaning what?
You and Edith look so relaxed. It must have been choice.
It was.
What are you talking about?
Nothing. Oh, how's Stevie?
Oh, not so well lately.
Oh? What's the trouble?
Just the nerves, I guess. Bells has had nerves indigestion for years. You should hear that man rumble like a truck on cobblestone.
I'm finished, Mrs. Hayes.
Thanks, dear.
Oh, there's nothing worrying Stevie, is there?
I don't know. I don't think so. He's been working too late the last few weeks, that's all.
Are you sure it's work, darling, and not a beautiful blonde?
Come on, Sylvia, let's feed.
The women head to the dining room.
Stephen's a very attractive man, you know.
Isn't he? Can't imagine why he hasn't deserted me for some glamour girl long ago.
Well, I wouldn't be too sure of Methuselah. I always tell Howard, if you ever manage to make a fool of me, I'll deserve what I get.
You certainly will.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mrs. Haynes, but Mr. Haynes is on the phone.
He probably can't get home to dinner.
Please don't talk about me when I'm gone.
Mary leaves the table and jogs back to the parlor. She picks up a phone receiver.
Dear. Oh, Stephen, what a bore.
Mary runs a hand through her curly dark hair.
Yes, I'm nearly packed, but...
She kneels down on the end of a couch.
I can unpack again.
Mary bites her lip.
I know. Oh,
No, darling. And don't you be too disappointed either. It'll be just as nice a little later on.
She lights a cigarette.
Maybe you can make an early train out tonight. I'll meet you at the station and we'll...
Mary pulls the cigarette from her mouth and looks down.
I see. I'm sorry, darling. Oh, no, it was just... Ingrid was going to outdo herself for you tonight, that's all.
Her eyes well with tears.
All right, sweet. You call me a little later, hmm? Goodbye, dear.
Mary hangs up. She puts out her cigarette in an ashtray, then strolls back to her guests in the dining room.
You look as low as a swamp, dear. What's up?
It's really too disgusting. Stephen can't get away to go to Canada for tomorrow.
He can't.
Well, as long as the trip's off, I think I'll move into town in the morning.
I certainly would if I were you, Mary.
Watercress, you know, I'd just as soon eat my way across a front lawn. Sylvie, what did you mean when you said Mary was living in a fool's paradise?
She was trying to make a Nancy Blake wisecrack about marriage. She said a woman's paradise is always a fool's paradise.
That's not bad, is it, Nancy? Well, Sylvia, whatever I'm living in, I like it.
No, thank you.
Go ahead, dear. No starch, it's gluten. Did you ever know such a housewife?
Sylvia shows off her nails.
Mary, how do you like that?
Too adorable.
You have no idea how it stays on. I get it at Sydney's. You should go, Mary. A wonderful new manicurist. Olga's her name. She's marvelous. Isn't that divine? Mm-hmm. Jungle red.
Looks as if you'd been tearing at somebody's throat.
I'll be darned, Nancy, if I'll let you ride me anymore.
Oh, Sylvia, Nancy's only trying to be clever, too.
Well, she takes a crack at everything about me, even my nails.
Well, I like them. I really do. Sydney's, Olga, Jungle red. I'll remember.
Later, Mary and Peggy enter Sydney's salon.
So I woke up this morning and decided for no reason at all to have myself completely overhauled.
But why, darling? Stephen adores you just as you are.
Mary shuts the door behind them.
What makes you think I'm getting overhauled for Stephen?
You are, aren't you?
Of course. I telephoned this morning for an appointment. I'm a friend of Mrs. Fowler's.
Anyone in particular for your manicure?
Who does Mrs. Fowler's nail?
Olga. I'll see if she's free.
Thank you.
My Johnny doesn't like Sylvia's jungle red. He says he'd like to do her nails right down to the wrist with a big buzz saw.
Oh, Johnny's intolerant. Sylvia's all right. Underneath.
Oh, Summer Ain't Mary, this is the most divine new perfume.
Yes, I have some. Stephen gave me a bottle for my birthday.
Oh, I think Stephen's awfully sweet.
Sweet?
Yes, because he gave you those gorgeous clips and then he bothered to give you perfume, too.
Olga's ready, madam.
Oh, thank you.
See you at the Rip at one. Yes, at one. Oh, do you want to take this with you? It'll keep you company.
Right up here, madam.
Bye.
Later in Olga's manicure room.
Good morning, madam. Good morning. Are you the one? I love to get a new client. I always think it puts a girl on her mettle. Don't you just love to me? How do they ever think up those plots? Don't soak it yet. But I suppose anybody's life would be a plot if it had an exciting finish. Who sent you in here?
Oh, Mrs. Fowler.
Oh, Mrs. Fowler, isn't she a limb? She sent me 3 clients this week. No, Mrs. Parrish. Well, Mrs. Parrish was telling me that Mr. Parrish came home one night with lipstick on his collar. Said he always explained everything before, but that was something he just wasn't going to try to explain. So good, please. No, Mrs. Potter, I did her at her apartment last week. It looks like a reform school. Those 7 daughters of hers are absolute gangsters. You know Mrs. Stephen Haynes?
Why, yes, I...
I guess Mrs. Fowler told you about that. Oh, Mrs. Fowler feels awfully sorry for her.
Well, I don't. I...
You would if you knew this girl.
What girl?
Crystal Allen.
Crystal Allen?
Yes, you know, the girl who's hooked Mr. Haynes.
Mary flinches.
Don't you like the file? Well, this Crystal Allen is a friend of mine. She's really a terrible man-trap. Soak it, please. She's behind the perfume counter at Black's. So was I before I got fired. Left. That's how she met him.
Mary's jaw drops.
Met Stephen Haynes?
Yeah, it was a couple of months ago. Us girls wasn't busy. It was an awful rainy day, I remember. So what? This gentleman walks up to the counter. Well, Crystal nabs him. I want some perfume, he says.
May I ask what type of woman for? Crystal says, very ritzy. That didn't mean a thing. She was going to sell him some of Rainout feature anyway. Well, Crystal goes on conning him and batting her eyes. She's got those eyes that run up and down a man like a searchlight. And she puts perfume in her palm and in the crook of her arm for him to smell. So we got to smelling around, and I guess he liked it. Since then, they've been inseparable, practically every evening. Oh, did I hurt? Jungle red, I suppose. Or one coat or two.
Mary pulls her hand away from Olga.
Never mind.
But I thought that's what you came in for. All Mrs. Fowler's friends.
I think I've got what all Mrs. Fowler's friends come for.
Oh, thanks. Well, goodbye. I'll tell you you're in, Mrs.
Mrs. Stephen Haynes.
Mrs.
Olga holds her hand over her mouth.
Gee, Mrs. Haynes, I'm sorry. Wasn't there something I can do?
Just stop telling that story.
Oh, sure, I will.
Please, don't tell anyone that you told it to me.
Oh, I won't. Gee, I promise. Gee, that would be kind of humiliating for you. I mean, well, Krista's a terrible girl. I mean, she's terribly clever and she's terribly pretty, Mrs. Haynes. I mean, well, if I was you, I wouldn't waste no time trying to get Mr. Haynes away from her. I mean, well, now you know, Mrs. Haynes.
Mary nods, then turns away. Now in her bathroom, Mary bathes her eye with an eye cup. Her maid, Jane, approaches.
Oh, Mrs. Haynes, your mother's here.
Oh, thank you, Jane.
Tell her I'll be right out, will you?
Yes, ma'am.
Mary dabs her eyes with a towel. Now Mrs. Moorhead enters Mary's bedroom.
Hello, dear.
Hello, Mother.
My. What lovely rubrums.
What will you wear this evening, Mrs. Haynes?
My old black, Jane.
Yes, ma'am.
Mary kisses her mother.
No, I think I'll wear my new pink.
Very well.
Mrs. Moorhead takes a seat on a couch.
What's on your mind, Mother? You sound so excited over the telephone just now.
I think I was, my dear.
She displays her nails.
Jungle red. I've been to Sydney's this afternoon, too.
Mary turns away and leans on a statue on a pedestal.
Did you have Olga?
No, but Olga knew who I was. She asked to meet me. She's very upset about that story she blurted out to you.
Mary looks off distantly.
She didn't say it wasn't true, did she?
No.
Mary closes her eyes.
Oh, Mother, I knew this sort of thing happened to other people, but I never dreamed it could happen to us. We've been so happy together. So really happy.
I know.
Mary buries her head in her mother's lap.
There, baby.
Mary lifts her head, wiping away tears. She reaches into her pocket, then into her mother's purse.
Have you got one?
She pulls out a handkerchief.
You haven't said anything to Stephen yet, have you?
Well, no, I haven't even seen him since I...
Then say nothing. And don't forget that's my handkerchief.
Shall I give this a touch with the iron, Mrs. Haynes?
Oh, yes, thank you, Jane. Look, Mother, rather sweet, isn't it?
Charming, and very wise of you to wear pink.
Mary glances at her departing maid.
Mother, you didn't really mean that I should say nothing.
Of course I do.
Oh, but Mother...
Maybe I felt the same way 20 years ago.
Mary gapes, blinking her watery eyes.
Not father. Oh.
Mary, in many ways, your father was an exceptional man. That, unfortunately, was not one of them.
And you said nothing?
Nothing. I had a wise mother, too. Listen, my dear, this story isn't new. It comes to most wives.
Oh, but Stephen...
Stephen is a man. He's been married 10 years.
Oh, you mean he's tired of me?
Stephen's tired of himself. Tired of feeling the same things in himself. Time comes when a man has got to feel something new, and he's got to feel young again, just because he's growing old.
Mother, Stephen isn't old.
No, of course not, but we women are so much more sensible. When we tire of ourselves, we change the way we do our hair, or hire a new cook, or decorate the house. I suppose a man could do over his office, but he never thinks of anything so simple. No, dear, a man has only one escape from his old self, to see a different self in the mirror of some woman's eyes.
Mother.
This girl probably means no more to him than that new dress means to you.
But Mother,
good heavens, he doesn't love the girl. If he did, you'd have felt it yourself long ago.
Mary looks away from her.
Yes, I always thought I would. I love him so much.
And he loves you, baby, so take my advice. Keep still. Keep still when you're fairly aching to talk. It's about the only sacrifice spoiled women like us ever have to make to keep our men.
And what if I don't want him under those terms?
But Mary...
Oh, Mother, it's all right for you to talk of another generation when women were chattels and did as men told them to, but this is today. Stephen and I are equals. Why, we took each other of our own free will for life because we loved each other. We've always given each other our best. And I won't qualify that relationship now. It's wrong, shockingly wrong. And women that... The stands of such things are just beneath contempt, that's all. I'll never be one of them, never.
But, Mary...
It's all over, Mother. It's finished. I'm through.
No, it isn't. It will never be finished while you love him.
Oh, I'll get over that. Women do. They have to.
Mrs. Moorhead gets up.
What are you doing this evening?
Oh, we're dining at home and going to the theater. I've asked Beth and Dave. I'll go through with it. And then I'll have it out with him after. I'll tell him I can't go on.
Mary, you're not to say a word to Stephen until you've thought this out and thought it all out very calmly. I'm going straight down this minute to get our tickets.
Tickets?
Yes, you're taking me to Bermuda. My throat's bare. I didn't want to worry you, but my doctor says...
Mary hugs her.
How sweet of you. But what can there be between us now? The thing that made us belong to each other is gone.
There's something more for you to think of now besides each other. There's your daughter.
Mary pulls away from her mother.
When Mary's old enough to realize, she'll know I'm right.
Well, have it your own way, darling, but don't forget it's being together at the end that really matters. Oh, and one more piece of motherly advice. Don't confide in your girlfriends.
I think they all know.
Do they think you know?
Mary shrugs.
Then leave it that way. If you let them advise you, they'll see to it in the name of friendship that you lose your husband and your home. I'm an old woman, my dear. I know my sex. Goodbye.
Mary runs after her and hugs her from behind.
Goodbye, darling. Thanks for coming up.
Mrs. Moorhead holds her hand.
It's rather nice to have you need mother again. Better think it over, dear, about Bermuda. Your home, little Mary's home, is worth putting up a pretty stiff battle for. Besides, there's nothing like a good dose of being left alone to make a man appreciate his wife. I think I'd better take my handkerchief.
Mrs. Moorhead leaves. Mary heads across the bedroom. She answers the phone and takes a seat on her bed.
Hello?
She straightens.
Hello, Stephen.
Looking up, Mary bites her lip.
Yes. Oh, you can't.
She looks away and flashes a knowing gaze.
I see.
Her brow furrows.
No, I'm not angry. Beth and Dave will be disappointed not to see you, that's all.
As her eyes well with tears, Mary smiles weakly.
No. I won't wait up.
She purses her lips.
Stephen, I think I'll take Mother to Bermuda for a few weeks. Yes, she was just here, and she doesn't seem to be feeling very well, you know?
She blinks back tears.
Oh, on the first boat, if you don't mind.
As Mary holds the slim white phone receiver to her ear, her shoulders rise and fall with a deep breath.
Oh, well, don't break your appointment, dear, if it's going to upset your business. But if you find you can go with us tonight, why, just call me back.
Her eyes brim with tears.
You needn't dress, Stephen, and it doesn't matter if you're late for dinner.
Licking her lips, Mary looks down.
Goodbye.
She hangs up. On the bedside table, her fingers turn a glass umbrella-toting figurine that adorns a perfume bottle labeled Summer Rain. Now, at Black's Fifth Avenue, a variety of summer rain bottles line display shelves. Sylvia's face appears behind them. She beckons Edith with her finger.
Well, here we are, creeping up on her.
Do you think we ought to do this?
Oh, shut up.
Edith motions to a woman standing at a display shelf with her back turned.
That's little Crystal.
None other.
The woman turns her homely face to them.
May I serve you, madam?
No, thank you. Looking. Oh, from the neck up, I'd say no. Oh, how about baby?
Of course.
They spot an elegant blonde clerk.
They also make it to that? Nice.
Couldn't be anyone else.
Pat, here's your customer's change.
Thank you.
Pat.
Edith frowns.
Oh, I still don't know why you overlooked her.
I do. Pipe.
A slender brunette with high cheekbones removes a perfume bottle from a display shelf. It's Crystal Allen. She glances at her watch and dashes into the back room.
Hey, never mind that. Just gotta go out right away. Wrap it up.
Was you asking for me, Miss Allen?
Been scouring the whole store for you. Why don't you run to my apartment and cook dinner?
I've got a date tonight, Miss Crystal.
Oh, you can break it. Come on.
But I'm noted for the bad way I cook.
If you throw a lamb chop into a hot oven, what's gonna keep it from getting done?
Hey, what have that hot cake you had on for tonight, darling?
It's hotter than ever, dear.
I'm having him dine at my place. It's about time he found out I was a home girl.
Home girl? Get her. Why don't you borrow the quintuplets for the evening?
Because I'm all the baby he wants, pet.
How much would you pay me?
$2.
Can't you make it three?
I said $2.
Oh, all right. Will I find anything in that icebox of yours?
Yeah, cobwebs and a bottle of gin. Here, get some dough. Now, go on. Get anything and make it fast.
The dark-skinned shop girl runs off.
It's for you, Crystal.
Oh, it's too late to take any orders. Now, Tom, I've left the floor. Anything.
All right.
I'll tell the gentleman.
Gentlemen, why didn't you say so?
Crystal grabs the phone.
Hello?
She grins widely.
Oh, hello, Stephen.
Her smile fades.
What? Well, don't worry, my sweet. Of course I don't mind your breaking our engagement. Well, that is, I mind, of course, but it's such good discipline for my selfishness about you.
Holy mackerel, what a line.
Shut up, will you?
The blonde clerk, Pat, leaves.
I was going to surprise you tonight, darling, and cook dinner myself in my little apartment. Oh, why, of course I can cook.
She thinks because Lulu's dark, he won't be able to see her.
Shh. Oh, well, you don't know half my accomplishments.
I'll say he does.
Will you get out of here?
Pat edges past her.
Oh, well, that's all right, Stephen. I'll save you a piece of the cake with a candle on it.
Pat eavesdrops from around the corner.
Oh, well, I didn't tell you before, Stephen, because I was afraid you might do something extravagant. Oh, it is dear of you to want to be with me on my birthday, but I won't be lonely. No, honestly, I won't. And if this weather lets up, my neuralgia will be better, and then maybe I can...
Pat smirks.
Oh, no, it's nothing. It's just nerves.
Seeing Pat giggle, Crystal turns her back to her.
I had a rather gloomy letter from home today. My little sister, she's not very well.
What's wrong with her? She got a hangover?
But she'll be all right. Yes, I'm holding the thought.
Crystal's eyes widen and she grins.
Oh no, Stephen. I couldn't think of your disarranging your evening. I'll have another birthday next year.
You'll have another one next
Look,
week.
So help me, I'm going to slug you.
Crystal glares at Pat.
Oh, Stephen, if you could drop by for just a few moments and have a glass of sherry to my health.
Watching her, Pat chuckles.
Stephen, oh, I do need you so.
Crystal bounces giddily.
Yes, dear. Yes, darling, I'll meet you on our corner in 5 minutes. Goodbye.
Crystal hangs up and turns to Pat.
Say, can you beat him? He almost stood me up for his wife. A couple late showers waiting for you, dear.
No, not for me, honey. You can have them. I got a hustle.
But they asked for you by name, dear. Miss Crystal Allen.
Oh. Why me?
Maybe they're slumming.
Crystal heads out to the display counter.
Might I be of assistance?
Edith nudges the ogling Sylvia.
Oh, yes. I'm thinking of changing my perfume.
Would you like something more subtle or something more in the woodsy order? This, for instance.
Is that what you use?
Oh, no, that's much too expensive for me.
Sylvia nudges Edith.
Nonsense, my dear. Pretty girl like you, with all the rich men that float in here.
I'm afraid when they come to this counter, they have other women on their mind.
I shouldn't think you'd let that disturb you.
Crystal gives her a sideways glance.
Oh, here's this new one, Summer Rain. That's the kind Mary Haynes is so keen about.
Oh, yes, that's it.
A friend of ours. Mrs. Stephen Haynes simply dotes on this.
Really?
Her husband picked it out for her. Perhaps you sold it to him. Stephen Haynes, the engineer.
Crystal smiles coyly.
Oh, I'm afraid I don't remember. You see, we have so many men come in here. Awfully good-looking. Tall, fair, distinguished. I'm sure you wouldn't overlook him. I'm sorry, but when one's mind is on one's own business... Of course. And as you say, you have so many men.
Sylvia and Edith sniff a diamond-shaped perfume bottle.
Oh, I wouldn't think that one suggested your personality at all. It's called, oomph.
Sylvia's eyes widen.
How amusing.
Oh, what's that?
Closing time. The bums rush and melody, dear.
Crystal glances to her side.
Good night, Pat.
Good night, Crystal.
Oh. I'm afraid we're keeping you.
Oh, that's quite all right.
Well, I'll take this. Charge it and send. Here's my name and address.
25 cents. My, you are getting off economically, aren't you?
Aren't I?
Sylvia and Edith walk off.
It'll be out tomorrow, Mrs. Prowler.
Sylvia stops and turns back.
Fowler.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Fowler.
I impertinent you.
lobstarter. She thinks I'm going to let her get away with that. She's got another thing.
Come on. You weren't exactly any little Pollyanna yourself. It's no wonder she called us.
A prowler, really. She's laughing at us. I know I can see from here.
Well, I believe she is.
She called me that deliberately. I'll have her fired. I'll go straight to the management this minute.
And I'll go.
As they turn to leave, an employee wheels a large open cart behind them. The two socialites tumble into it, their legs flailing. Now, a grainy home movie shows a cruise ship pulling into the Bermuda port. On land, Mary emerges from behind a palm tree and does a cartwheel.
Ta-da!
Mommy, you never told me you could do that.
Well, I can do a lot of things that you don't know about.
Mary watches as she runs the projector.
Bermuda's finest railway.
Did you like to ride on that funny thing, Mother?
Well, we had to like it. There wasn't a single automobile in Bermuda. Those were our taxi cabs. Now you're going to see your grandmother ride a bicycle.
Grandma, you can't ride a bicycle.
Oh, can't I? Here I come.
Oh, Grandma, you're a riot.
Mrs. Moorhead topples a row of 20 bikes.
Right, that's a catastrophe. How did you ever get out of it?
Oh, your mother brushed me up in a dustpan.
Oh, Mother, what have you got on there?
On a boat, Mary reels in a fish.
He's certainly giving you a run for your money.
There.
Oh, that fish is as dead as a doornail, Mother.
What?
He wouldn't fool anybody.
Well, no harm in trying. Now watch. This is where the camera goes overboard. There you go.
Underwater.
Well, Grandma, did you drop our precious camera in the water?
Precious camera? Your precious grandma dropped in right after it, straight to the bottom of the ocean.
You did?
Well, now, quite to the bottom. I know I saw whales on my way up.
Mary looks off forlornly as she lies on a beach.
Weren't you having a good time that day, Mother?
Well, I guess I was getting homesick for you about that time. Till your grandmother broke it up.
Mary covers her face bashfully.
You're pretty in that picture, Mother. With the book in front of your face.
Oh. Well, show is over.
Homesick for me or for Daddy?
Or Sheba.
Oh, if Sheba would have been along, you would have stayed the full 4 weeks you planned on, eh?
Of course.
The music teacher's here, Mary.
Thanks. Well, don't put the machine away yet, Mother. I want to run them for Daddy.
Oh, I ran them for Daddy last night.
I bet Daddy wished he was there when he saw you catch that fish.
Yes, I bet he did.
We missed you so while you were gone, Mother. Daddy and I.
Oh, did you?
Yes, he finally had to take me to the zoo to cheer me up.
Well, fine compliment to me.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way, Mother. You're better than all the lions and tigers and elephants in the whole wide world.
Oh, bless you.
I saw Mrs. Potter at the zoo that day.
Who was she visiting with, the snakes?
Oh, Mother.
As a matter of fact, she was. Mrs. Potter said she and Auntie Sylvia would call you up that evening in Bermuda.
You didn't tell me they'd called you up.
Oh, didn't I? Well, I guess I thought they hadn't said anything worth reporting. Mademoiselle is waiting, Mary.
Oh, bother. Well, goodbye, Grandma, darling. I'll give you a lesson someday with the camera.
She leaves.
Mary, is that why we hurried home ahead of time?
Why we hurried?
Yes, was it something those women said to you when they called you up?
Of course not, darling. You're so suspicious.
As a matter of fact, I'm very happy we came home when we did.
Stephen has spent every evening with me since I got back.
And are you really happy, dear?
Divinely.
Mary.
Mary takes down the movie screen.
Look me in the eye. Now, say it again.
I'm divinely happy.
She puts on a weak grin. Jane enters.
Mrs. Haynes, Mrs. Potter just telephoned. She said she'd see you at the fashion show after lunch.
Will you put those things away, please, Jane?
Yes, ma'am.
How would you like to come along this afternoon and watch me splurge?
And listen to Edith Potter. I'd sooner have the itch.
I'm afraid you don't humor my friends enough, Mother dear.
Humoring some of them ought to cut their throats. Mary, now that you're home again, promise me that you'll stay in your own remote little ivory tower and be very, very non-committal about yourself and Stephen.
They won't get a thing out of me.
Good.
Any more advice to the loved one?
You mustn't kid, Mother dear. I was a married woman before you were born.
No.
Mary hugs her mother. Now an orchestra plays in the back of a ballroom as Mary and her friends mingle at a banquet table.
Okay, darling. Here's one of these. They're delicious.
Now, Edith, don't tempt me. I just lost pounds in Bermuda.
You are thin, darling. I hope it's not from worry.
No. The topics are swell for the figure.
Oh, what'd you wear down there, dear?
Flax mostly. I got terribly sloppy.
Oh, one always does, traveling alone.
You ought to load up on clothes for Stephen, dear.
Is he taking you out much?
Yes, lots.
Come on, girls, let's sit down.
She can't take it.
A woman takes the stage.
Bonjour, madame. Mademoiselle. It gives me great pleasure to be your cicerone on our adventurous little voyage into fashion land. But today, ladies, as an innovation, you will see the models go through the rhythmic movement of everyday life, and you will be able to study the flow of the new line as it responds to the ever-changing flow of the female form divine. Et maintenant, our little peep into the coming season.
A spotlight illuminates the stage now in color as the curtains open. A model in short white culottes stands near a badminton net with a racket. She hits a birdie, which is returned by another woman in a similar outfit adorned with red, white, and blue stripes on the bodice. A third model enters carrying a wooden croquet mallet and ball. She turns, displaying her white jacket trimmed with blue lapels. As she strides off, two other models take the stage, each wearing white sporting combos. One has a blue and white top, the other tan and beige. The backdrop rotates, revealing a model on a diving board. She holds open her cover-up. Its lining shows hands holding red roses, matching the fabric on her one-piece swimsuit. Pinned to the cover-up's lapel is a plastic hand holding a rose. The model again opens the cover-up and shows the lining. As she leaves, another woman enters, bouncing a beach ball. She wears a red and white striped cover-up over her two-piece swimsuit. She tosses away the ball, and another woman bounces it back in. A third swimsuit model passes her, wearing a long blue wrap skirt with white fur pockets that show matching blue shorts underneath. The model tosses the beach ball to the backdrop, and a woman in a white two-piece riding a wooden seahorse catches it. The next model enters wearing a white hooded cape with a clear plastic visor. She lifts her arms, revealing a midriff-bearing swimsuit with wide bands of fabric crisscrossing her chest. Now, a capuchin monkey in a cage wears a similar robe and clear visor.
This is McHead conducting the monthly test of the cable TV alerting system. This test is conducted on the first Tuesday of each month at 10 a.m. The system will be activated only when an emergency is threatening. You will be informed of the emergency condition and advised to take precautionary action. This is only a test.
At a compact in her matching knitted wool purse, she checks her hair, then motions to two of the other models. They follow her. The remaining woman at the cage turns, displaying her cream-colored fur jacket tied at the waist with a gray sash that matches her knee-length skirt. As the models leave, two more enter. One wears a black scarf fashioned to her hat that drapes down over her ears and around her neck like a cowl. The other wears an orange and red skirt suit and a small felt hat with a feather. As they leave, the backdrop rotates again. The other side now shows a rolling meadow. Under a fake tree, a woman wears a white sheer pinafore with short sleeves over a dark gathered skirt. As she spreads a tablecloth next to a picnic basket, more women approach. The first holds up the folds of her orange and white striped dress and sits. The next twirls her skirt, showing off its variegated patterns of red, blue, and purple. On the other side of the stage, a woman emerges in a white dress overlapped with lavender flower patterns on sheer satin. The next woman wears a high-waisted black skirt tied in front with a white bow. The last woman to join them has red tassels hanging from the sleeves and cinched waist of her white dress. She moves between the other women, letting them smell a bouquet of flowers in her hands. Behind them, a scenery flat painted like a smiling bull pops up and winks. Four of the models flee as the other two move downstage and twirl. The lights dim. Now the backdrop shows theatergoers watching a performance. The curtain of the fake stage closes and the lights come back up. Models rise from the back row and file out. The first, clad in a black evening gown with sheer white sleeves, checks her makeup in a compact. The next woman wears a lime green halter-topped gown, her upswept hair cupped inside a clear plastic hat. Two more models walk forth, one wearing a shimmering black dress with rows of ruffles, the other in a white dress with a long two-tone cape, one side red and the other white. They approach an African-American woman serving drinks. As they sip from cocktail glasses, another model steps forward. She wears a white sleeveless gown with a gold lamé swirl descending from her waist and a green wrap tucked around her forearms. The first two theater patron models approach the drink stand as the others leave. Behind them, another woman emerges from the auditorium backdrop. She wears a white layered dress with gold embroidery and a matching gold pillbox hat. As she twirls, the lights dim again. Now the backdrop resembles a laboratory with enormous flasks and coiled tubes. A screen rotates at the top of a staircase, and a model heads down wearing a black strapless gown and a tall black bonnet tied under her chin. She twirls, showing off a large bow in the back of her dress, then saunters away. At the top of the staircase, the screen rotates again, revealing another model in a slinky red dress with matching evening gloves. She turns, showing a three-quarter length velvet cape edged in fur. On her head is a pointy red hat with an upturned brim. Its cone-shaped top is made of shimmering gold fabric. At the staircase, another model enters in a flowing beige gown with full draped sleeves. A matching scarf hangs over her head like a hood, with a black feather jutting sideways from the top. The model stops and crosses her arms over her chest. A jewel-tipped 4-inch bauble of gold protrudes from the back of each of her green evening gloves. As the curtains close over the stage, the film returns to black and white.
Princess Mara, show here, please.
A model in a cape approaches Mary and her friends.
Hello, Mary.
Hello.
You should have it, Mary. You're just what it needs.
It was Mrs. Potter who asked for the dress, Princess.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You'd sell a woman anything, wouldn't you, Mara? Come here a minute. Why don't you wear it right? I saw it in Vogue. The cape goes up here and down in the back.
Princess, what do you know how to wear clothes?
Well, of course, I'm not a model, lamb, but nobody disputes how I wear clothes.
Princess Mara, you'd better apologize.
Oh, it's just professional jealousy. They're really very good friends.
Oh, yes, of course we are. She adores the Fowler family, particularly my husband.
Are you accusing me of flirting with Howard?
No, my little pet, but of trying to. I'd like to see Howard Fowler bat an eye at another woman.
Well, I've seen him, and she's not bad either.
Well, you little...
Come on, Sylvia, let's look at the lingerie.
Did you get her in your window? I've always hated that creature, the way she exploits her title and everything. There's one thing in this life I am sure of, it's Howard Fowler.
They head into a parlor.
Oh, hello, my dear. Hey, you. Oh, no, I don't like that.
Bermuda?
Yes, I had a nice rest. Howard wants me to go on a world cruise.
Oh.
Oh, isn't that adorable?
Oh, dear.
Fine. Don't tell me the price, but how much is it?
$225.
It is a nightgown, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'd be glad to wear it for an evening gown.
Oh, isn't she naive? Oh, Mary, darling, you ought to have it. Even if Stephen doesn't notice the nightgown, he'll notice the bill.
All right, I'll take that.
The lingerie model crosses the room to Crystal.
I could use a few more gowns on the same order. You know, imports with hand embroidery.
The model follows her past Mary.
I'll get it back.
Oh, please, don't bother.
Oh, Mary, how humiliating.
Mary, you poor darling. I could die for you.
Why? What's the matter? I don't want it. It's too expensive anyway.
You don't know who she is?
No, who?
That's Crystal Allen.
Through her dark veil, Mary looks across the room with a forced smile as Crystal holds a dress to her body.
Yes, it's very nice.
She hands it to a saleswoman.
I'll take that, too.
Pretty, isn't she?
But, Mary, darling, did you hear the brazen thing? At 2 1/4, she could use a few more.
Mary, you're not just going to stand by and let that common little...
Sorry, girls. Time for my fitting.
As Mary stands and leaves her three friends, her smile fades. She walks forward with a distant gaze, distractedly bumping a woman in a fur coat. One of the saleswomen, Miss Batchelor, approaches her.
I've been saving a good room for you, Mrs. Haynes. It's right this way. I'll have your fitting set down directly.
Miss Batchelor shows her into a private fitting room. Across the hall, Crystal enters another fitting room.
Right in here, please.
Thank you.
In Mary's fitting room, Mary sobs. She regains her composure as a model enters.
I knew one-piece lace foundation, Goldman. Just up the back and no bones.
The model returns to the hall.
Our new one-piece lace foundation, Gorman. Zips up the back and no bones.
She enters Crystal's room.
Our new one-piece lace foundation, Gorman. Zips up the back and no bones.
Will you open a chart?
Yes, please.
May I have the name?
Allen, Miss Crystal Allen, the Hotel Viceroy.
May I have your other charges? Sachs, Bergdorf, Cartier?
Oh, I'll be opening those in a few days.
Then may I have your bank?
I've no checking account either at the moment.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Allen, but we must have one business lesson.
Certainly. Mr. Stephen Haynes, 20, Wall. He's a very old friend of my family.
That will do. Mrs. Haynes is a very good client of ours.
Oh? By the way, I've never met Mrs. Haynes.
Oh, she's a dear.
Yes, I'm sure she is. So I'd rather you wouldn't mention to her that I gave her husband as a reference. Do you mind?
Of course not, Miss Allen.
Thank you.
We understand.
What do you mean, you understand?
I mean her...
Never mind.
Please, I hope you don't think I meant
it. No, it's quite all right.
Crystal removes her jacket and skirt.
Oh, it's so dreadful living in a strange city all alone. You have to be so careful not to do anything people might misconstrue. You see, I don't know Mrs. Haynes yet, and I'd hate to get off on the wrong foot before I've met her socially.
Naturally, women are funny about little things like that.
Hey, wait a minute. You know that blue jersey number? Here, unzip me, will you? That blue jersey number you had in the show, all drippy with embroidery?
The blue negligee?
Yeah, will you bring that in? I want to try it on.
Certainly.
Meanwhile.
Oh, that really suits you, Mrs. Haynes.
Oh, yes, it is nice, isn't it?
Is there something wrong?
No, it's really charming.
Yoo-hoo, may I come in?
I'll get your hat, Mrs. Haynes. Sit down, Sylvia.
Oh, Mary, dear, you do know. Why don't you confide in me?
Sylvia, will you please stay out of my affairs?
No, I won't. If you think I'm going to stand calmly by and let you hide your head in the sand like some ostrich, you're very much mistaken. You're positively the only one in New York who doesn't know all about this. Horace says that Stephen hasn't been seen in the club in the afternoons for a week.
As Sylvia eyes her, Mary's brow furrows.
Oh, go away, Sylvia.
Oh, Sally, show that model to Miss Allen right there. Your hat, Mrs. Haynes.
Oh, yes. Oh, is that, Crystal Allen across the hall?
Yes, she's a new customer. Do you know her?
Plot.
Is she a lot of money?
I think she knows where she can get a lot.
Well, she's buying everything she sees regardless. Why, Mrs. Haynes, are you ill?
No, I think I'm just a little tired.
I'm afraid you've been standing too long.
You go get her a glass of sherry.
Oh, surely.
Mary sits down.
Oh, Mary, dear, you'd feel so much better if you talked this out with someone. Stephen's an absolute worm spending money on a girl like that.
Oh, shut up, Sylvia.
What, do you like being made ridiculous before all your friends? Now, don't be a fool, Mary. Go in there.
Go in there. I'm going home.
Miss Batchelor returns. Sylvia grabs the sherry, then pushes her out.
Now, Mary, now's your chance to go in there and put an end to this thing. Go in there and just say a few quiet words. Tell her you'll make Stephen's life an absolute tornado till he gives her up. Look where she was 6 months ago, and look where she is now.
Sylvia, will you please let me do what I want to with my own life?
Mary storms past Sylvia.
Well, she may be a perfectly marvelous influence for your husband. But she's not going to do your child any good.
Sylvia glances slyly at Mary.
What do you mean?
Oh, far be it for me to tell you things you don't care to hear. I've known this all along. Edith wanted me to tell you when we called you up in Bermuda. But did I utter?
What's this got to do with my child?
Well, it was while you were away. Edith saw them. Stephen and that creature and little Mary lunching in the park. She said they were having an hilarious time. That Basil had her arm around little Mary and was kissing her between every bite. When I heard that, I was positively heartsick, dear.
Sylvia gulps down the sherry.
But as you say, it's your affair, not mine. No doubt that girl will make a perfectly good stepmama for your daughter.
As Sylvia leaves, Mary holds her hand on her forehead, blinking back tears. She turns and paces, then stops and stares at the door. Taking a deep breath, she marches out, crosses the hall, and raps on the door to Crystal's fitting room. Sylvia watches from around the corner as she heads inside.
I beg your pardon.
I'm Mrs. Stephen Haynes. Sorry, but I don't think I know you. I believe it's my husband you know.
Oh. So Stephen's told you?
No, he's never mentioned you.
Miss Allen, here's the blue negligee you ordered.
Stay out of here. But I've known about you for some time.
That'll be news to Stephen. Personally, I'm glad you know.
I've kept still because I knew it wouldn't take Stephen long to get fed up.
Don't lay any bets on that, Mrs. Haynes. I'm not you.
You've been seeing my daughter. That's what I've come in here to tell you. I won't have you coming near my daughter.
You don't have to get hysterical about it. What do I care about your daughter? I'm sick of hearing about her.
You won't have to hear about her anymore. Because you and my husband aren't going on seeing each other.
Crystal smirks.
That's rather up to Stephen, don't you think?
Completely. So you better start making other plans, Miss Allen.
Listen. I'm taking my marching orders from Stephen. He seems to be satisfied with this arrangement. So don't force any issues unless you want to cause plenty of trouble.
Mary steps close to her.
You've made it impossible for me to do anything else.
You're very confident, aren't you?
Yes. Because I know Stephen couldn't love a girl like you.
Well, if he couldn't, he's an awfully good actor. Look, what have you got to kick about? You've got everything that matters. You've got the name, the position, the money.
My husband's love happens to mean more to me than those things.
Oh, can the sob stuff, Mrs. Haynes. You noble wives and mothers bore the brains out of me. I'll bet you bore your husband, too.
You are a hard one, aren't you?
Oh, I can be soft on the right occasion. Look, what did you expect me to do? Burst into tears and beg you to forgive me? Isn't that what you really came in here for, Mrs. Haynes?
Not after seeing you. You're even more typical than I dared hope.
Well, honey, that goes double. Now, look, get this. I'd break up your snug little roost if I could, but I don't stand a chance. Oh, don't think it's because your husband isn't crazy about me. It's because he's the kind that lets that old-fashioned sentiment put the Indian sign on him, and that's all.
I'm glad you understand the strength of sentiment, Miss Allen.
Because its beauty is something you'll never know.
Crystal opens the door. In the hall, a group of eavesdroppers turns away.
This happens to be my room, Mrs. Haynes.
It's yours, yes, for the time being, like everything else you've got. May I suggest, if you're dressing to please Stephen, not that one. He doesn't like such obvious effects.
Thanks for the tip. But when anything I wear doesn't please Stephen, I take it off.
Mary strides out. In the hall, the other women watch coyly as she returns to her own room.
So that's what she calls meeting Mrs. Haynes socially.
Gee, I feel sorry for Mrs. Haynes. She's so nice.
She should have kept her mouth shut.
Now she's in the soup.
Oh, Ellen's smart. She sticks to so anything Mr. Haynes says is going to sound wrong.
She'll get him, sure.
Look at that chassis. She's got him now.
Oh, you can't trust any man. That's all they want.
What else have we got to give?
She models for a customer.
Our new one-piece lace foundation garment. Zips up the back and no bone.
Ready? Up!
Now, in an exercise room, Sylvia lies on a mat, kicking her legs as a trainer instructs.
Down, up, stretch, up, together, up, over, up, down, up, stretch, up, together.
Of course, my sympathy is with Mrs. Haynes, but then they always are with woman against a man, but she's been awfully stupid about it. Imagine her going in that video room and facing the creature. I begged her not to. I said, Mary, where's your dignity?
The instructor holds down Sylvia's extended leg.
No more up. This has got me down.
Rest a moment and relax your diaphragm muscles. Okay.
She changes the record.
Her mind to get a divorce is terrible on her friends not knowing. Naturally, you can't ask them anywhere.
Now on your side.
Sylvia kicks one leg up.
Ready?
And down.
Up, down.
Of course, for her daughter's sake, I think she ought to hang down. On. I know I would.
Don't bend your knee.
She never should have faced Mr. Haynes with the issue. When the man's got himself in that deep, he's got time to down. Taper it off.
Why in not?
Mrs. Haynes never listens to any of her friends.
How does she avoid it?
I tell everybody whatever she wants to do is all right by me. I've got to be loyal to Mrs. Haynes, you know. Oh, I'm simply exhausted.
She collapsed.
Suppose you try something simpler, like crawling up the wall.
Oh, well, I go through to keep my figure.
She shuffles to the wall and lies on her back.
Lazy dinner partner, I said. What you do with yourself all day, Mrs. Fowler?
Sylvia puts her feet against the wall.
Crawl slowly up the wall.
As Sylvia's feet walk up the wall, Peggy rushes in.
Makes me feel like vermin.
That shouldn't be much effort. I mean, crawling up the wall.
Now, no, Sylvia.
Well, Peggy, you're doing it again. Now,
it's all I'm doing. Well, Sylvia, you know, please. Let's begin with posture.
Sylvia stands.
The lady always enters a room erect.
Lots of my friends exit horizontally.
Now, knees apart, sit on the wall, relax. Roll slowly up the wall, pressing each little vertebra as hard as you can. Shoulders back, head back. Mrs. Fowler, lift yourself behind the ears.
Ouch!
Now, chin up, elbows bent, up on your toes, arms out, shoulders the small of your back, you're off.
They tiptoe
John's
forward.
He's furious with me for letting you pay for these.
You ought to be darn glad he's not paying for it. Are you still giving him your own little income?
Yes, and he's so proud that he resents taking that tiny amount.
Well, if he resents it, it's only because there isn't more.
The instructor tilts Sylvia's pelvis forward.
John's so clever, he makes so
much. Well, but little clever, you'll hang on to your own income. It's the only protection a married woman has.
No, you both as you were when you left the wall.
I am.
No, Mrs. Fowler, you're not. Not this, Mrs. Fowler. That.
She straightens her lower back. Sylvia imitates her.
That's better. Now relax on the mat.
They go to the mat and lift their arms.
Ready? One, two.
They let their arms drop, then fall like rag dolls onto the mat.
Now then stretch your toe. Ready? Then stretch, bend down.
As they work their legs, Edith enters in a smock and chin wrap.
What are you doing up here?
I'm having a facial downstairs. Darling, I've just done the most awful thing.
Mrs. Potter, we're right in the middle of our exercises.
Oh, well, you go tell them I want my paraffin bath. Now, there's it. I'm simply exhausted.
Mrs. Fowler, you've hardly moved a muscle.
Look, whose carcass is this, yours or mine?
It's yours, but I'm paid to exercise it.
Oh, you talk like a horse trainer.
Oh, Mrs. Fowler, you're getting warm.
She walks out.
How do you look? Darling, I've just done the most ghastly thing. Move over, will you? It wasn't until I got here, right in the middle of my facial, that honestly, I could bite my tongue off.
Well, Edith, what is it?
Well, I was lunching with Dolly the Pice.
I know what you're going to say. You forgot she's writing a gossip column and you told her something about me.
Darling, you know I never give you away. I told her all about Stephen and Mary.
Oh, that.
It wasn't until I got here, right in the middle of my face.
Edith, there'll be in all those dreadful scandals.
I know it. I've been racking my brain to try and remember what it was I said. I think I said that when Mary went into the next fitting room, she yanked the ermine coat off the Allen girl.
You did.
Oh, well, I don't know whether I said an ermine or a sable coat, but I know that I said she gave the Allen girl an awful smack.
Oh, Edith.
Well, that's what Sylvia told me.
I did not.
You did, too.
Well, anyway, I didn't expect you to go tell it to some cheap reporter.
Oh, it doesn't make any difference anyway. The divorce is practically settled.
Who says so?
You did.
I said that Mary could hardly broadcast her domestic affairs and not expect them to wind up in a scandal.
Mary didn't broadcast them.
Who did?
You did. You all made it perfectly impossible for Mary. That's the sort of talk that mixes everything.
This is Governor George Ryan. Broadcast stations and cable systems are participating in the required monthly test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
Lady Matron mauls girl from the wrong side of Park Avenue. Jane glances sadly over her shoulder at the door, then turns down the bed.
Well, your idea of love and mine are slightly different, Stephen. I don't like being one of a group, even if I am twice.
Jane puts her ear to the door, then tiptoes into the hall and leans toward the voices.
Stephen, we can't go on like this.
Jane steals out the landing door, closes it, then dashes downstairs. Maggie waits in her bathrobe.
What's happened?
Jane ushers her into the kitchen.
Well, it's come. Yeah. They're having a showdown.
Oh, what's happened?
Give me a cup of coffee and I'll tell you about it. She said that he's put her in an impossible situation. She can't even walk down the street without being pointed at on account of her picture being in all the papers.
Now, ain't it the truth?
So then he blames the whole thing on her girlfriend for spilling it all.
Well, that ain't far from wrong either.
Oh, dear. Enough to make you lose your faith in marriage.
Whose faith in marriage?
What? Don't you believe in marriage?
Sure I do, for women. But it's the sons of Adam that they gotta marry. Well, what else did they say?
Well, Mr. Haynes says, I told you I'd give her up, and I did. And I was a swine about the way I did it. How do you suppose he did it, Maggie?
I don't know. Maybe he just said scram. The wife is on to us.
Well, Mrs. Haynes seemed kind of hurt by him saying he was a swine the way he'd give her up. So she says very quiet, would you like to go back to her, Stephen?
And did he lie in his teeth to that one?
The way he said he wouldn't, I kind of believed him. But the madam says, you should really make your manner a little more convincing, Stephen. And then she tried to sort of laugh, but it didn't come off very well. Then he says, aren't you ever going to trust me again, Mary?
I hope she said no, because you can't trust none of them no further than I can kick this lemon pie.
Oh, no. He said this girl was really a good girl. That's why he feels he owes her something. She wouldn't take nothing from him for months.
Oh, that one's a clever one. She'd have to be to get Mr. Haynes.
Well, that's just what the madam said. She said, Stephen, can't you see that girl is only interested in you for your money?
I bet that made him sore. A man hates to be told no woman but his wife is fool enough to love him.
But then she brought up about him taking little Mary to lunch with that creature. And he said the poor girl just happened to be passing by as he and little Mary were taking lunch in the park.
And that's a laugh.
Yeah, and that's the way she took it. And they both got mad, and he started telling her all over again what a good husband he'd been and how hard he'd worked for her and little Mary. And she kept interrupting him by saying that as a wife, she wasn't such a washout herself.
Oh, listen, anybody that's ever been married knows that line backwards and forwards.
Yeah, well, then somewhere in there, he starts saying, Mary, I may have been a heel, but you've always been first with me.
First. Now, don't that sound just like a husband?
Well, yeah, that's what she thought, I guess, because she says kind of hysterical, Stephen, I don't go for being one of a group, even if I am first. And that gets him kind of sore. And he says, I don't ask you to be fair to me, Mary, but please remember we have a child and we do owe something to her. And that's when she really blew up.
Sure, no woman wants to be told she's being kept on just to run a kindergarten.
Yeah, well, finally it got to him saying, Mary, you've known about us for weeks. Why did you have to wait till now to make a fool of me?
As if he needed her help.
Then she says suddenly in an awful low voice, Stephen, we can't go on like this. And he says, you're right, Mary. We can't.
Well, you're quite an actress, ain't you?
My new boyfriend says I got eyes like Jeanette McDonald.
Did he ever say anything about your legs? Well, how did it all end?
Oh, it ain't ended. They're still at it.
Well, then what are you doing down here, then? Get back up there and see who's ahead. We may be out of our jobs tomorrow.
Maggie pushes Jane out of the kitchen and the maid trots back upstairs. Sheba stands on her hind legs and paws Jane's door. Jane steps inside, closing the door in the dog's snout. Tail wagging, Sheba goes to the next door. Later, Jane rushes downstairs.
Well?
In the kitchen.
Well,
Oh, I want some more coffee. I'm done in.
Oh, relax now and tell me everything that happened.
Well, when I got up there, the first thing I heard was the madam saying,
Stephen, I want a divorce.
Abdicate him.
Well, Maggie, you could have knocked him down with a feather.
I'd like to knock him down with this. What did he say?
Well, he said he didn't blame her. How could he? But he wished she'd wait and think things over. He said she should go to bed and get some rest, and he was going out for a breath of fresh air.
The old hat trick.
And she says, fresh air. Is the air so much fresher in the Viceroy Hotel? That's where the girl lives. And he says, for heaven's sake, Mary, one minute you never want to see me again, and the next minute I can't even go out for an errand.
Oh, you oughtn't to let none of them out except on a leash. Well, what happened then?
Well, nothing for a time. He just kept walking up and down, up and down.
He was thinking.
And then he said he was going out, so naturally I got ready to scoot. But I heard her call Stephen, and he stops on the landing. And she says, don't slam the front door. The servants might hear. So I come down here. Gee, Maggie, I feel so sad for her. Do you think they're really going to break up?
I don't know. You know, the first man that can think up a good explanation how he can be in love with his wife and another woman is going to win that prize they're always giving out in Sweden.
Maggie puts away the coffee pot. Now, Sheba lies on a chair in Mary's dressing room and lifts her dark eyes to Mary. As Mary packs clothes into a large trunk, she jots on a notepad. Sheba goes to Mary and paws her. Distracted, Mary kindly strokes the dog, then glumly returns to her work. Sheba pads into an adjoining room, where Jane packs a similar trunk. Sheba stands on her hind legs, touching Jane's skirt, and Jane stops briefly and pats the dog's bristly head. As Jane removes a man's blazer from a hanger, Mary enters.
Jane, here's some books you can put in.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Mr. Haynes won't want that open.
She takes the blazer, turns to the closet, then stops.
I guess none of my business.
Oh, Mrs. Haynes.
Mary grips Jane's arm.
You'll put this in too, will you?
Mrs. Moorhead enters.
Train leaves in less than an hour. It is a plenty of time. The traffic's maddening.
Yes, Mother.
Mary takes a bag into her bedroom.
Stephen's secretary is bringing around more papers for me to sign. Oh, I never knew there could be so many.
You've shown everything to your lawyers?
Yes, and they keep telling me I'm getting a raw deal.
Now, Mary.
Oh, Mother, it isn't true. Stephen's been very generous.
I'm sure he has. You're both making a terrible mistake.
Please, Mother.
You and Stephen have a child, Mary.
Mother, what good will it do her to be brought up in a house full of quarreling and suspicion? And no, she'll be better off with just me.
No, she won't. A child needs both its parents in one home.
What's the use? Every argument just keeps going on in circles, it seems to me. And besides, it's too late now.
No, it's never too late when you love someone. Oh, Mary, call this off. Stephen doesn't want a divorce.
Why doesn't he fight me on it then?
Because he's not the fighting kind.
Well, neither am I.
Oh, blast these modern laws. 50 years ago, when women couldn't get divorces, they made the best of situations like this. And sometimes, out of situations like this, they made very good things indeed.
Jane enters.
Mr. Haynes, secretary, ma'am.
Tell her I'll see you in a few minutes, Jane.
Come and bathe your eyes. You don't want that adding machine to see you like this. And remember, you have to tell little Mary, yes?
Yes, I'm going to tell her, but I've been putting it off because I...
Because you hope that at the last minute a miracle will keep you from making a mess of your life.
Mary whips around, then bites her lip and enters the dressing room.
Did you ever think that Stephen might marry that girl?
Mary steps into the doorway and stares at her mother. With a sigh, her shoulders collapse.
Oh, no.
She gapes pensively.
He wouldn't do that.
What makes you so sure?
Because Stephen, deep down, really still loves me. But he won't find it out until I've gone away.
She drops her gaze, then takes her mother's hands in hers.
Make Mary write to me at Reno at least once a week, will you?
Mrs. Moorhead nods.
And don't spoil her too much.
Spoil her, my goodness. You'd think I'd never raise children of my own.
Mary gives her a kiss. Later, Jane sees in two businesswomen.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Haynes. This is Miss Primerback from the office. She's a notary. I brought the inventories of the furniture. Mr. Haynes wants to know if he can have the portrait of little Mary.
She hands Mary a form.
Oh, yes, but it's in storage.
Well, this will get it out. Sign here.
She hands Mary a pen, and Mary signs.
The cook's letter of reference.
Mary signs it.
Sign here. The insurance papers. Sign here. Transfer papers on the car. What do you want done with it?
Well, I don't know.
I'll find a garage. Do you care to rent this apartment, Mrs. Haynes?
Mary looks up.
Well, I thought I might take a smaller one.
This will give us power of attorney until you return. Sign here.
Mary smiles wryly.
Your husband took the privilege of drawing you a new will.
Well, really...
It's to your advantage, not his. This will cuts off Mr. Haynes. Your attorney's overlooked that small detail. We'll need three witnesses. Your maid will do.
Oh, Jane, will you witness this? It's my will.
Oh, Mrs. Haynes.
Sign here.
Jane leans over the will.
You can always make changes in the event of your remarriage. Don't hesitate to let me know at the office if there's anything I can ever do for you.
There'll be nothing, Mrs. Watts.
There are always tag-ins to a divorce, Mrs. Haynes. You know how Mr. Haynes hates to be bothered with inconsequential details.
She shuts her briefcase.
Well, good afternoon, Mrs. Haynes. Pleasant journey to you.
Goodbye. Bye, Mrs. Haynes. I wish you weren't going.
Mary smiles warmly.
Thank you.
Jane approaches.
Mr. Haynes said I was to give you these, ma'am.
Jane hands Mary a corsage in a round, transparent container, then rushes off. Mary glances at the box, then lays it aside. Spinning around, she sits, removes its lid, and takes out the card inside. It reads, "What can I say?" Signed, Stephen. She tosses the card aside. Her hands fly up to cover her face, and she yanks them down again. As she starts to cry, Mrs. Moorhead approaches with little Mary.
Mother, where are you?
Here, dear.
They enter.
All set, dear?
Yes.
All set.
Mary, Mother would like to have a little talk with you before she goes.
I'll wait for you.
Mrs. Moorhead leaves, and Mary takes her daughter's hand.
Mary,
Yes, Mother?
Mary leads the girl to the window and peers down into her eyes.
Mary...
She turns to face the window as her daughter grips her hand.
Have I done something wrong, Mother?
Oh, no, darling, no.
As Mary hugs her, she smiles. With her Buster Brown hat tied under her chin, little Mary sits on the bed and leans back on her elbow.
Mary, you know Daddy's been gone for some time.
A whole month.
Shall I tell you why?
Why?
Mary kneels in front of her daughter and meets her gaze.
You know, darling, when a man and woman fall in love, what they do, don't you?
Kiss a lot.
They get married.
Oh, yes. Then they have those children.
Well, sometimes married people don't stay in love.
What, Mother?
She touches her mother's brooch.
The husband and the wife fall out of love.
Why do they do that?
I don't know. But they do. When they do, they get unmarried, you see?
No.
She pins the shell brooch on her jacket.
Well, they do, that's all. They get what is called a divorce.
Oh, do they?
You don't know what a divorce is, dear.
Yes, I do. Lots of my friends have mommies and daddies who are divorced.
Oh, you know I love you very much, don't you, Mary?
Of course, Mother.
Mary lowers her eyes and bites her lip.
So you see, Daddy and Mommy are going to get a divorce.
Little Mary's eyes widen.
That's why I'm going away.
Mary fixes her focus downward.
That's why I...
As she meets her daughter's eyes, she sees little Mary blink back tears.
Oh, darling. I can't explain quite, but... When you're older, I know you'll understand. And you'll forgive me. You really will. Baby, look at me, please.
The little girl's lips tremble as she slowly turns to face her mother.
I am looking at you, Mother. Doesn't Daddy love you anymore?
No, dear, he doesn't.
Don't you love him?
Oh, No, Mary.
Mother, why?
I don't know, but it isn't Daddy's fault or it isn't Mommy's fault. It's just...
But Mother, I always thought that when you love somebody, you love them until the day you die.
With children, yes, but grown-ups are different. They can fall out of love.
I won't fall out of love with you and Daddy when I grow up. Will you fall out of love with me?
No, darling, never. But that's different, too.
But I don't see how.
Well, you'll have to take my word for it, baby. It is. This divorce has nothing to do with our love for you, don't you see?
But if you and Daddy...
Oh, darling, I can explain it better on the way to the train. We'll go alone in the car, shall we?
Mary gets a handkerchief.
Mother, if you and Daddy are going to get a divorce, Which one won't I see again? Daddy or you?
You live with me, Mary. That's what happens when people get divorced, you know. Children must go with their mothers. But you'll see Daddy often, dear.
Mary grips the girl's arms and pats her cheek.
Come along, darling.
Please, Mother, wait for me in the car.
Why?
I have to wash my hands.
Little Mary returns the shell brooch and leaves. Mary lowers her eyes as she pins it back on and sees Stephen's corsage on the floor. She picks it up and heads out. Meanwhile, in the bathroom, little Mary leans tearfully against the door jamb.
Darling, why don't you do something? Do something, Mother dear. Oh, do something.
Nighttime. The train streaks through a cacti-filled desert. Inside her stateroom, Mary rests her head on one fist while clutching Stephen's corsage in the other. She stands up and leans over the sobbing Peggy in the seat opposite her.
Please, darling, don't. You mustn't.
Oh, Mary, who'd have thought that I'd be going to Reno, too?
A plump maid enters.
Come in. Is you the lady that needs the toothbrush?
Yes.
I guess you made up your mind to come on this trip in a hurry, didn't you?
Yes.
I thought you did. The porter will be making your room up next, Mrs. Haynes.
Thank you.
As Peggy dabs her tears, Mary takes out a letter.
Oh, Mary, did you hear from Stephen?
Yes. No. That's from an old beau.
Oh. You'll be having lots of beaus now, won't you, Mary? Well, I won't. I'll never look at another man. When I think of the things he said to me, my Johnny.
No,
he wouldn't let me buy a car with my own money. Just because he couldn't afford a car, I can't have a car. He wants me to be a slave.
Oh, no, he
doesn't. Oh, yes, he does. The only protection I have is my own little income.
Sounds like Sylvia.
Well, this time she's right. Oh, Mary, if I couldn't have caught this train to be with you, I'd have jumped right in front of it.
That would have been quite a feat, dear.
Oh, I'm such a fool.
Mary hugs her friend.
Oh, maybe Johnny is right. Hey, stop it. You'll have me crying, too.
As they embrace cheek to cheek, Peggy stares off.
Mary.
Yes, dear.
Listen to the wheels. Do they seem to be saying anything?
No.
Don't they seem to be saying, go back, go back, go back. Go back, go back.
Why don't you go back to him?
I can't, Mary. After all, I have my pride. Yes.
I know. Don't you think you better get some sleep, dear?
All right. I'll see you in the morning.
Peggy slides the door open and steps out.
If you can't sleep, dear, send for me, will you?
I will.
Good night.
Good night.
Porter's ready now, Miss Haynes.
Grabbing her purse, Mary enters the club car and passes a woman smoothing a girl's collar.
What, darling?
Mommy, will Daddy come to Reno?
No, darling.
Mommy, where is Daddy?
I don't know and I don't care. In the future, you'll please refer to him as that heel.
A matronly woman in a mink coat watches from the bar.
Sherry, won't you join me in some champagne?
Looking up from a magazine, Mary smiles.
Yes.
You look so desolate sitting there all by yourself.
Did I?
I'm the Countess de Love.
Of course, I've seen your pictures in the paper.
And I've seen yours, too.
I'm Mrs. Stephen Haynes.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Oh, my dear, those crummy newspaper pictures didn't do you half justice. Let's all have a little talk.
A young woman turns from her embroidery.
You too, dearie. Now, don't sit in that corner and mope. Let's all have a little drinking.
Champagne? Right you are.
The two younger women join the pearl-draped Countess at the bar.
This sweet little thing's getting her first divorce, too. She's a very dear friend of mine. Oh, what'd you say your name was, darling?
Miriam Aaron.
Oh, this is Mrs. Haynes.
Miriam looks Mary over.
You know, yank the scalp off that Allen woman in the fitting room.
Oh, yeah, good for you. I was afraid you were a wet firecracker. Shay, hello.
Cheer up, Sherry. Wait till you've lost as many husbands as I have. married, divorced, oh... L'amour, l'amour. That's French for love.
Oui, oui.
But where love leads, I always follow. Take it, dearie, take it. Dip that pretty little beaky.
Well, happy days.
Happy nights.
They each sip champagne.
Mrs. Ahrens is connected with the stage. Or is it the circus, dear?
It was the chorus.
The chorus? Oh, dear, you must tell us all about it sometime. I bet you made some great hauls out of our New York boyfriends.
If you mean diamond bracelets and boxes of orchids, that breed died out just before my time.
Yes, isn't it a pity? But then I never got a sou out of anybody except my first husband, Mr. Strauss. Oh, he said the most touching thing in his will. I remember every word of it. He said to my beloved wife, Flora, I leave all my estate to be administered by executives, because she is an A1 schlemiel. Wasn't that sweet?
Any ladle, sweet, that dishes out some gravy.
Yes, isn't it true? None of my other husbands ever gave me a dime. Oh, Lamour, how it can let you down. How it can pick you up again, too, dearie. Oh, dear, where is this wretched train taking us?
We're in the mountains, dear.
I detest mountains. You know, they always remind me of the day that Gustav made me climb to the top of an Alp. Gustav was my third husband. Oh, give Flora another little drinky there. Well, anyhow, there we were, when suddenly it struck me that Gustav had pushed me. I slid halfway down the mountain before I realized that Gustav didn't love me anymore. But love takes care of its own, Miss Haynes. I slid right into the arms of my fourth husband, the Count.
Well, isn't that the bird you're divorcing now?
But of course, dear, what else could I do? When I found he was putting poison in my headache powders.
Poison? You're not a very good judge of character, are you, Countess?
No, that's the trouble with me. I don't pick them for character. I'll bet you picked yours for character.
Well, yes, in a way.
Yes, and where did it get you? On the train for Reno.
On the train for Reno.
Well, my way, your marriage may not last till death, but... It's fun while it hangs together. You know, I think it's cruel sitting around waiting for somebody to die. What'd you pick yours for, darling?
Not for character.
There you are. No matter what you pick them for, where does it get you?
On the train for Reno.
On the train for Reno. Well, let's all have another little drinky. To Reno, the biggest little city in the world. American cradle of liberty.
Reno, beautiful emblem of the great divide.
Mary stares wistfully past her champagne glass.
What's the matter, dearie? Cat got your tongue?
Mary forces a smile.
No.
She lifts her glass.
To Reno.
Now, lettering on a mailbox reads, Double Bar T Ranch, Reno, RFD, Route 3. A sturdy, weathered-faced woman flips open the mailbox.
Too slow. Horton is pleasure. Parton is grainy. And a false-hearted lover.
She thumbs through the envelopes.
Worse than a thief. The grave will decay you and turn you to dust. That ain't one boy out of 20.
Peggy comes out of the ranch house.
Oh, honey, house tricks.
Where's Miss Haynes?
Don't know, but she'll be moseying around pretty soon. For the whole 6 weeks she's been here, ain't never known her to be very far away when the mail comes in. Wish to heavens that man of hers would write her a letter, send her a telegram or something.
Men are all like that, Lucy. Anything for me?
Nearly a postcard, dearie. You'll miss Miss Haynes a lot when she leaves tomorrow, won't you?
Yes, I will.
By Jiminy, ain't finished getting her packing done yet. Come on, honey. If mope as well in her room as you can anywhere else. How come you didn't get your divorce this morning along with Miss Haynes?
Oh, I had to wait for some papers from New York.
I see. Truth to tell, I'll miss Miss H, too. She's about the nicest ever came here.
I hate Reno.
You didn't come for fun. The grave will decay you and turn you to dust. There ain't one boy out of 20 the poor girl can trust.
You've seen a lot of divorces, haven't you, Lucy?
Been cooking for them for 10 years.
Do you feel sorry for us?
Well, ma'am, I don't. You feel plenty sorry enough for yourselves. For land's sake, she ain't got much else to do.
You've never been married, Lucy.
I've had 3.
Husbands?
Kids.
Oh, well, then you're probably very happy.
Good gracious, ma'am. Stopped thinking about being happy years ago.
You don't think about being happy?
Ain't had the time. The kids know. The old man's such a demon when he's drinking. Them big, strong, red-headed men. They're fierce.
He beat you, Lucy. How terrible.
Ain't it? When you think what a lot of women on this ranch need a beating worse than I do.
Lucy puts away a suitcase.
I'll get Buck to come fix that thing.
But Lucy, you live in Reno. You could get a divorce overnight.
Great Scott, a woman can't get herself worked up to a thing like that overnight.
Outside, the Countess rides up with a liquor jug attached to her saddle.
Peggy, Lucy! Hi, Countess! Come on, babe, you've seen my first time.
Outside, the Countess dismounts her horse.
Is Mrs. Haynes around?
No, Countess, but...
Hoisting the jug from the saddle horn, the Countess follows stiffly into the ranch house.
Oh,
Well, she wants to see Mrs. Haynes, and I simply got to see her alone.
Hello, how are you, dear child?
All right.
Did you see the doctor? What'd he say?
Oh, he said it was the altitude.
Oh, my dear, you got the Reno jumpy wumps. Lucy, here's a wee juggy. We must celebrate Mrs. Haynes' divorce.
Right you are, Countess.
Oh, Countess de Lava, I don't think a divorce is anything to celebrate.
It's the ocean was whiskey, and I was a neck. I dived to the bottom and never come up.
Resting the jug on her hip, Lucy pours whiskey into three tumblers. Peggy winces nervously, and the Countess stretches her arms in the doorway.
I love you the more. Oh, baby, oh, baby.
Lucy, have you ever been in love?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, tell us about it.
The Countess sits back with her drink.
Ain't much to tell. I kind of enjoyed the courting time. It's a pretty sight as you ever saw to see him come looping across them hills. The sky's so big and blue, and that brick top of his blazing like the bajiggers in the sun. Then we'd sit on my back fence and spark. But, ma'am, you know how them big, strong, red-headed men are. They just got to get the point. So we got married, ma'am. Naturally ain't had no chance to think about love since.
Miriam enters.
Hello, Countess. How's the rhythm on the range?
Simply divine, my dear. Gallop, gallop, gallop madly over the sagebrush.
Hello, sunshine.
Oh, hello.
What you need is a wee drinky of this good corn liquor.
No, thanks. Is that invitation general, Countess?
Yes, indeedy. As we say, on the range. Here's to freedom. Day after tomorrow, I shall be free. Free as a bird.
Miriam pours a
that
drink.
That little French buzzard. But whither? Whither shall I fly?
To the arms of our pet cowboy, darling.
The Countess's jaw drops.
Miriam Aaron.
Why, Slum Loco for you, Countess. He likes you even better than his horse. And it's such a blasted big horse, too.
Now, Buck Winston is nice. He's so young and strong. Have you noticed the play of his muscles? Oh. Musical. Musical.
Great Scott, you don't mean to say his joints squeak.
Lucy.
Well, he could crack a coconut with those knees if he could get them together. Say, Countess.
The Countess sits.
That guy hasn't been arousing your honorable intentions, has he?
She shrugs.
Yes. But I'm different from the rest of you. I've always put my faith in love. Still, I have had four divorces. Dare I risk a fifth?
What are you risking, Countess? And maybe I shouldn't ask.
The Countess rolls a cigarette.
Alas, I fear I'd never make a success of Buck at Newport.
Oh, well, why not? They'd have to admit Buck's handsome. Mm-hmm. But if I had your dough, I'd sell him to the radio first.
The radio?
Well, sure. Just think how that voice of his might sound cooing over a microphone.
Dreamily drifting over the ether. Why not? I'll turn him into a radio star. L'amour. But tell me, Miriam, when are you going to open up and tell us your great secret?
What secret, Countess?
About the man in your life. After all, there must be a man.
She gets her purse.
Look, I would have spilled it before, but I found out that his wife's a friend of our palsy Welby's.
She puts coins in a slot machine.
Who is it? Tell me.
Ever hear them speak of Sylvia Fowler?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it's the dame's husband, Howard Fowler.
How sweet.
Yeah, and all he had to do to get rid of her was just one time.
Oh, look, you got the jackpot.
Mary enters.
Hello, girls.
Hello, babe. How does it feel to be free?
Oh, great.
You lie.
Well, have it your own way.
Oh, Mary, could I see you outside for a minute, please?
Certainly, dear. As my last official act in Reno, I'm going to prepare the supper with my own little hands. Oh, Lucy. Any mail?
Here it is, my lady.
As Peggy looks on, Mary stares at the envelope.
It's from Edith. You can't take that childish hand.
Herring! Reckon that's the new boarder, ladies. Just got in on the afternoon train from New York.
As they walk outside, Mary opens her mail.
Listen to this. Dear Mary, that blundering stork has just delivered Phelps and me another female.
Oh, no, good heavens, that makes eight girls.
Eight little cherubs, how sweet. L'amour. To's your l'amour.
As the Countess opens the jug, a buckboard carriage pulls up.
Who the heck is paging l'amour?
Sylvia.
Peggy gapes.
Sylvia Fowler.
As Mary smiles, the Countess and Miriam trade a sly look. Lucy gets Sylvia's bags.
Well, here I am, girls. Move over.
Sylvia grabs a saddle.
What's that dude contraption?
An English saddle. I refuse point blank to learn to ride one of those Western things.
Did you ever see a horse laugh?
Pardon?
Well, you're going to. Here's a letter for you.
Oh.
Want to go to your room now or stay here and dish with your buddy?
Sylvia waves her off.
I'll be along.
As Lucy carries the saddle and bags away, Sylvia smiles at Mary.
Et tu, Brute.
Darling.
She hugs Mary, then Peggy.
What a gathering of the class.
Well, why didn't you send us a wire or something?
Sylvia starts to kiss the Countess's cheek, then stops.
Oh. Another member of the big roundup?
This is the Countess de Love, Mrs. Howard Fowler.
How do you do?
They eye each other.
And Mrs. Ahrens.
How do you do?
Sylvia eyes her.
How do you do?
Well, that Howard Fowler, the man I've trusted my life with, has kicked me out. Kicked me out for some filthy beasel.
Miriam starts
don't
to leave.
Don't go, darling. We're all girls together. Poor Mrs. Fowler, a little drinky.
Okay.
But, Sylvia, he couldn't have kicked you out, not Howard.
Is that so? Well, that's all you know about him. The man's a fiend, an absolute Borgia. You wouldn't believe the things he did to me.
What?
Well, he very meekly and innocently picked a quarrel with me one day, so I ordered him out of the house. Did I know he had dictographs hidden all over the place? Did I know I'd given him complete grounds for incompatibility, all recorded on nasty little discs in the most awful-sounding language?
Mrs. Fowler.
Then he calmly told me that if I didn't go to Reno to divorce him, he'd go to Reno to divorce me. Divorce me. Ruin my reputation.
Sylvia. Who is the woman, Sylvia?
Nobody knows, not even Winchell.
Miriam hands her a drink.
Here, our sister, buck up.
Oh, thanks.
Here's to Cupid. Tomorrow you can stop right in looking around.
You're darn right I can't, Countess. I don't intend to sit around and act glum when I think of what I've sacrificed for Howard Fowler.
Such as what, Mrs. Fowler?
I gave him my youth.
She looks at her mail.
Oh, airmail, special delivery. Huh. Probably a bill forwarded to me by Howard, the skunk. Oh, it's from Carol Hammond.
A clipping falls out. The Countess grabs it.
Oh, she's petty. The Potter's new baby's another catastrophe. Looks like Phelps and has lungs like a bull.
The clipping reads, Miriam Vanity's errands has just been renovated.
Say, there was a clipping in here. Where is it?
It continues. Three guesses, Mrs. Howard Fowler, as to who she's going to marry. As Miriam sneaks off, Sylvia grabs the clipping and reads.
Hey, give me that.
Sylvia turns to Miriam's seat.
Hey, you...
She looks around.
Hey, wait a minute, you.
She runs after Miriam.
Hey, you. Wasn't your name Aaron?
What's it to you, Mrs.
You stay right where
Sylvia
you
grabs
are.
The reins of Miriam's horse.
Miriam Vanity's errands is now being renovated. Three guesses, Mrs. Fowler, who she's going to marry.
They gape at Miriam.
Why, Miriam.
Oh, why can't those moldy rags leave a successful divorce alone?
Why, you little...
Now, Sylvia.
Did you know about this? Oh, of course not. But what do you care? You don't love Howard anyway.
But that has nothing to do with it. How much did he settle on you?
I made Howard pay for what he wants. You made him pay for what he doesn't want.
Why, you filthy...
Don't start calling names, you Park Avenue playgirl. I know a lot more words than you do.
Sylvia pulls Miriam from the saddle.
You dare strike me? I got glasses on.
No, you haven't.
She takes Sylvia's glasses off, slaps her, and runs. Sylvia swings, hitting the horse's rump. The Countess catches up with Miriam. Sylvia yanks Miriam's hair, and Miriam pulls the brim off Sylvia's hat. As the Countess grabs Miriam's arms to restrain her, Sylvia rips the helpless woman's shorts off. Miriam steps out of the shorts and kicks Sylvia in the shin, then in the back, sending her headfirst into a chaise lounge. Miriam stays on her, and they wrestle onto the ground.
Pretty well matched, ain't they?
Mary pulls Miriam onto the chaise lounge. The Countess sits on Sylvia.
Oh, leave them enjoy themselves. I'll go get the smell results for the loser.
As Lucy leaves, Sylvia squirms under the plump Countess, then shoves her off. Getting to her knees, she finds herself looking at Miriam's bare legs. She viciously bites the back of Miriam's knee. Mary comforts her.
Oh, who's got some iodine?
In my bathroom. Help her, will you, Peggy?
Yeah, I gotta be careful of hydrophobia.
Mary helps Sylvia up.
Oh, Mary, how could you let her do that to me?
Oh, forget it, Sylvia.
You're on her side. You're my own cousin, and after all I've done for you.
Just what have you done for me?
I warned you.
Well, I'm not exactly grateful for that.
Oh, aren't you? Well, you're getting just exactly what you deserve. And plenty of the girls are tickled to death.
Sylvia smashes china on the picnic table. Lucy drags Sylvia into the house.
Everybody, I hate everybody.
Listen, Miss Fowler, you've got the high story.
Oh, you wait. Someday you'll need a girlfriend, and then you'll think of your treachery to me.
The Countess and Mary face each other.
Oh, poor creatures. They've lost their equilibrium because they've lost their faith in love. L'amour. Oh, a man can ride a horse to the range above, but a woman has to ride on the wings of love.
Mary strides into the house. Now, in the bathroom, Peggy puts iodine on Miriam's leg.
Well, a nice little bout between a couple of lady palookas.
Right,
We're really a couple of cats.
Mary inspects Miriam's wound.
Yes. Oh, Mary, I'm going to have a baby.
Miriam and Mary look up.
Peggy! Oh, Mary, what shall I do?
Peggy cries and Mary hugs her. Miriam stifles a sob and grabs a towel.
That's splendid.
Okay, baby.
Peggy, what's John's telephone number?
Eldorado 53598.
Now, wait a minute. What is it?
Eldorado 53598.
They rush to a phone.
But, Mary, I can't tell him.
Why not? Isn't he old enough to know? Long distance, please.
I always wanted a baby, but what can I do with it now?
Well, you can enter it for Harvard or land it with a Marine.
New York, Eldorado 53598. 53598. Oh, but Mary, I can't tell him. I wouldn't know how to begin.
Oh, you'll know when you hear his voice.
No, Mary, it's no use. You don't know the things he said to me. I have my pride.
Reno's full of women who have their pride, sweetheart. It's a pretty chilly exchange for the guy you're stuck on.
Mary shoots her a look.
Mr. Day, please. Reno calling. Oh, Mr. Day? Just a minute.
Suffering saints. That guy must live for the phone.
Oh, Johnny.
As Peggy grips the phone, Mary and Miriam take off.
Hello, Johnny. No, I'm not sick, but... Well, I'm all right, but I... Oh, Johnny, I'm going to have a baby.
She leans wistfully into the receiver, then her eyes light up.
Oh, darling, are you? Oh, darling, do you? Oh, darling, so do I.
She sinks into the couch with a smile.
Oh, so do I. Oh, God, I forgive you. Oh, yes, precious. Yes, lamb, on the very next train.
Her lips press to the mouthpiece.
Johnny. Oh, Johnny, do you mind if I reverse the charges? Goodbye, precious.
Rolling back on the couch in a daze, she hangs up and stares at the ceiling. She gets up and walks outside to join Mary and Miriam.
Hey! Oh, Mary, don't expect me for dinner. I've got to pack.
But what happened?
Oh, Mary, when I get back, I'm going to do everything John says.
Oh, good.
Peggy turns to go and Mary nudges her. Peggy stops and gives Mary a hug, then takes off.
Listen, sister, when are you going to get wise to yourself?
Mary's smile fades.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Mary leans against the wall.
Why, well, I was divorced this morning, Miriam.
Oh, a Reno divorce.
Mary's eyes widen. Miriam runs inside and Mary waits in the doorway.
Hello?
Miriam turns her back.
No, operator, we completed that call.
Mary's shoulders sag and she hangs her head. Miriam sadly watches her pace outside the window.
Mary, listen to me.
There's nothing you can say that I haven't heard.
Sure? Maybe I got a new slant. I come from a world where a woman's gotta come out on top or it's just too darn bad.
She lights a cigarette.
All right, Miriam, talk to me all you want. But what does it come to? Compromise.
Well, what the heck? A woman's compromised the day she's born.
Can't compromise without a defeat. He doesn't want me.
How do you know?
Well, I've waited every day to hear from him.
Did you write to him?
Of course not.
How do you know he hasn't been waiting, too? Listen, honey, I've been through all this before. You know, I lost my man, too.
You?
It only happened once. Got wise to myself after that. Look, how did I lose him? We didn't have enough dough to get married, and I wouldn't... Well, I had my pride. Heaven knows where I got it. I liked him a lot better than I've ever liked anybody since. And what did my Romeo do one day? He took a little walk out on me. I made a terrible row. Why shouldn't I? I should. But what I ought not to have done was to have run away and leave him in the clutches of that woman like a coward. That's what you are, Mary Haynes. You're a blithering coward.
Mary's jaw drops and Miriam walks away.
Why?
She climbs inside through the window.
Because I wouldn't stay and be second fiddle?
Because you ran out of the trenches under fire. You deserted him.
I deserted him?
Well, sure you did. You don't think he wants to be in the grip of that red-headed octopus, do you? I bet if you'd given him half a chance, he'd have asked you not to get this divorce.
Mary fingers a blouse button.
Why, Miriam, he did ask me.
You still ran away?
Yes.
Miriam paces.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now, listen, honey. Don't you know that we dames have got to be a lot more to the guy we marry than a schoolgirl sweetheart? We got to be a wife. A real wife. And a mother, too, and a pal. Yeah, and a nursemaid. Sometimes when it comes to the point, we've even got to be a cutie. You should have licked that girl where she licked you. In his arms. That's where you win in the first round. And if I know men, it's still Custer's last stand. Shocked you? Okay, sister. But my idea of love is that love isn't ashamed of nothing.
Oh, that's easy enough to say, Miriam. But that girl's in his blood. I couldn't have stayed under the same roof with him and faced that.
Well, why not? Suppose the guy had smallpox. You wouldn't like to have faced that either, would you? But you'd have done it, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Oh, honey, this jam that he's in would make a bad case of smallpox look like a carnival. So while the poor guy's floundering around helpless, you remove the one protection he's got, his legal marriage. So he's back there, stumbling around in the open, delirious and unprotected, with a she-wolf and lamb's clothing right on his heels. And not one word of comfort out of you. Because why? Because you're too busy nursing your two-for-a-nickel pride. Operator, we completed it. You say it's New York calling, Mrs. Haynes?
Mary looks up hopefully. Miriam glances and nods.
It's Mr. Haynes?
She brings Mary the phone.
Tell him you'll tear that divorce decree into a million pieces and use it for confetti.
As Miriam leaves, Mary smiles at the phone.
Hello?
She exhales slowly.
Hello, Stephen.
Wide-eyed, she holds the mouthpiece close.
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice.
She tilts her head and strolls with the phone.
Yes, it went through on schedule this morning, but Stephen, I can still...
She maintains her smile.
But Stephen...
She listens impatiently.
No. I haven't seen the papers. How could I up here?
As she holds the receiver to her ear, her smile slowly fades. Her lips tremble as she stares blankly over the mouthpiece. She sinks onto the couch, then nods slightly.
Yes.
Her eyes well with tears.
I'd rather you told me.
Listening intently, Mary wets her lips.
Of course. I understand the position you're in.
Mary's head sags to the side. Her eyelids slide shut, and she nervously bites her lower lip.
I hope you'll both be very happy.
She stares off, then wets her lips.
Me? Oh, no. I have no plans. No plans at all.
She sighs absently.
Do you mind if I hang up now? Goodbye, Steve.
Miriam enters. Mary hangs up with a fixed stare.
He married her, didn't he?
Mary gives a slight nod.
Yes.
Mary's eyes dart about.
This afternoon.
She slowly turns and pushes herself up.
Gee, sister. I'm sorry I spoke so rough to you.
All right, sister. It was a nice try.
Holding her head, the distraught Mary staggers to a daybed and collapses on the plaid cushions.
I don't know what I'm kicking about. I still have my pride.
Miriam sits on the edge of the bed.
Don't cry, honey. Don't cry.
Mary turns away and buries her face.
Come on, buck up. Buck up.
As Mary weeps, Miriam stares away sadly, then leaves. Now, Crystal reclines on a round satin pillow in an ornate bathtub. Nibbling a chocolate, she dangles a cigarette in the other hand. She looks up as Helene, her maid, comes in to clean.
But madame has been soaking when all hour.
So what?
But monsieur thinks...
I told monsieur the doctor ordered me to soak in this foam for my nerves.
Well, what do you want? Monsieur suggests that you join him and walk little Mary to her mother's apartment.
Oh, ye mackerel, what a cheerful evening. Oh, I'm so bored.
She throws a bar of soap.
Monsieur says that it does not improve madame's nerves to stay so long in the water.
What do you mean by that? A crack?
Oh, no, he did not say it that way, madame.
I thought not. I've been Mrs. Stephen Haynes for 18 months now without a single squawk. That's some sort of a record for Park Avenue.
Get out.
Get out! Go on, go on!
As Helene scurries off, Crystal answers the phone.
Hello, you.
She smiles coyly.
No, I'm in the tub.
She squirms under the bubbles.
And I'm shriveled to a peanut waiting for this call. And say, listen, don't call me anymore today. If there's any calling to be done, I'll call you. It's safer. Oh, I know. When I had this phone put in here, I thought I'd have a little privacy, but... Phew, the way people barge in and out, you'd think it was Grand Central Station.
She glances at the door, then smiles.
What? Maybe it's a good thing you're going to coast tomorrow. Well, it's getting to be too risky.
She draws on her cigarette.
Say, listen. I've worked too hard to land this meal ticket to make any false moves now. Romance? Listen, peace is a whole lot more to me than any romance. They're not going to get me out on that limb again, ever.
She tosses the cigarette onto a tray.
What?
She adds more bubble bath. Little Mary enters.
Sure, I'll miss you, baby. I'll miss you like nobody's business.
The girl watches from the doorway.
I'll say we had fun. I'll call you back.
Noticing Little Mary, she hangs up and stares sternly.
Who told you to come in here?
Daddy. He's going to take me home now, and I want to say goodnight.
She curtsies.
Oh, don't go, darling. Hand me that sponge there, will you?
Please.
Please?
Little Mary tosses her a round bath sponge from a stand.
Night.
My, you're in a hurry to tell Daddy about it, aren't you?
About what?
My talk on the telephone.
I don't understand grown-ups on the telephone. They all sound silly. Good night.
Good night who?
Little Mary looks away with her hands behind her back.
You've been told to call me Auntie Crystal. Well, why don't you do it?
Yes.
Yes what?
Yes, good night.
You sit down there.
It's awfully hot in here. I've got my coat on.
You heard me, young lady. I said sit down.
Little Mary sits on a stool.
Now, we're going to have this out once and for all. I've done my level best to be friends with you, but you refuse to cooperate.
What?
Cooperate.
Oh, cooperate.
Now answer my question. You don't like me. Why?
The girl glances at her, then gets up.
Well, good night, Crystal.
I said why?
Little Mary faces her.
Listen, Crystal, my mother told me I wasn't to be rude to you.
Listen, young lady, you're going to give me one good reason why you don't like me.
I never said I didn't like you.
But you don't like me, do you?
No, but I never said so. I've been very polite considering you're something awful.
Just wait till your father hears about this.
Listen, Daddy doesn't think you're so wonderful anymore.
Did he tell you that?
No, Daddy always pretends you're all right. You see, you wouldn't know about such things, but my daddy's a gentleman. He never talks against any woman, not even you. But we understand, Daddy and I, without ever saying a word to each other.
I'll bet you've done plenty of blabbing to your mother.
No, I haven't. It's my job to try and make Mother feel cheerful.
Go on, get out of here. Scram, on your way.
Mary marches to the door.
And another thing. I think this bathroom is perfectly ridiculous. Good night, Crystal.
She curtsies, then shuts the door.
Why, you...
Crystal answers the phone.
Hello. Look, I told you not to call me back here again. It's too dangerous. That little Haynes brat was just in here. Say, you've been drinking. Oh, yes, you have. You're all lit up or you wouldn't be wanting me to take any chances either.
You! May I come in?
Just a minute, Sylvia. Here comes more trouble. Now, look, I'm going to hang up, and don't you dare call me back here again. Do you understand that?
Frowning, Crystal glances about.
Come in, dear.
She wears a fancy draped gown.
Oh, I was out in the open when you called, darling. I hope you'll forgive me for being modest. You, modest? Huh. I'll have to tell that to my psychoanalyst. Would you believe it, my dear? I have to tell him everything.
That must be a great effort.
Oh, yeah.
She spits out a candy.
Oh, I don't mind talking about myself. But discussing my friends does make me feel disloyal. Oh, I just saw poor Stephen leaving with little Mary. He looked awfully tired and worn. Dr. Sylvester says Stephen has a guilt complex.
A what?
Oh, want me to scrub your back a bit, dear?
Yeah. Dr. Sylvester says, here, hold this.
Dr. Sylvester says that men like Stephen can't admit that what they feel for a woman is anything but love.
Ouch, you're taking the skin off my back.
Oh, sorry. Dr. Sylvester says that that's why Stephen married you, to convince himself that your friendship had dignity and importance. Isn't that a laugh?
Say, who are you to laugh? I've made good with my husband.
Is that any way to talk to me after all I've done for you?
All done what?
You didn't know a soul when you married Stephen. After all, it wasn't easy to put you over.
And who said you put me over?
I've gotten you into some of our very best homes.
Yes, for some of their very best insults.
Sylvia turns up her nose and heads for the door.
Oh, Sylvia?
What?
Who was Mrs. Buck Winston before she married Buck Winston?
La Comtesse de Lave. Imagine giving up the title to marry that cowhand. I have to laugh every time I think she actually got him into radio. My dear, he's positively the chambermaid's delight.
Crystal's head turns.
Oh, is he?
Mrs. Potter is on the phone for you, Mrs. Fowler.
Oh, I'll take it in here.
Crystal shakes her hand at Helene.
Oh, but it's on the other phone, madame.
Other phone? Oh, you mean to say that charming little instrument is not an extension?
Oh, Stephen does so much business on the other phone, I had to get one of my own.
Oh, I'll bet you anything that Stephen thinks is an extension.
Stephen doesn't mooch around my bathroom.
That's pretty obvious.
Go on, answer the telephone.
Sylvia smirks.
Tell her I'll call her back.
Sylvia waves Helene out of the bath, then sits beside the tub.
Oh, you sly little fox, you. This settles the question that's been on my mind from the very beginning.
What are you driving
at? Put that phone in here to talk to a man.
Oh, don't be ridiculous.
Oh, don't lie to me, Crystal. Everybody knows you're not Stephen's type. I never understood why I picked you up in the first place.
Look, Sylvia, I've got to take a shower. Wait for me in my bedroom.
As Crystal drops a curtain between them, Sylvia grabs a jar.
Oh, I use this cream. It brought out a rash.
Sylvia answers.
Don't you dare touch that telephone.
Hand up, Sylvia. Hand up the phone.
Sylvia's jaw drops and Crystal hangs up.
What did he say? Nothing. Not a single thing. He was singing.
All right, so what?
Come at ya, yippee-hi-ya, darling. Oh, Crystal. How could you? Buck Winston. The chambermaid's delight.
You haven't got a thing on me, Sylvia Fowler. Not a single thing.
Do I care? I'm mum as an oyster. I don't want Stephen to get anything on you. That would give Mary Haynes too much satisfaction. Now, if you hang on to Stephen, we'll both be happy.
Will you shake on that?
Why not?
Now at Mary's apartment.
Is the coast clear?
All clear, Mrs. Moorhead. They've been having a very gay dinner party.
Well, I'm still glad I went to the movies. I'm starving. Those dreadful women. How my daughter can tolerate them, I'll never understand.
Oh, well, it seems that Mrs. Haynes cooked dinner for them in Reno the night she got a divorce.
So she feels...
So she feels she has to feed them annually. Did they bring their same husbands this time?
Well, I guess so. They couldn't all very well get new ones in only 2 years.
The approach of the innocents.
I leave you my share of them, Jane.
Now, Mary and Miriam enter wearing fancy gowns.
Well, Miriam, how's matrimony? Still making a go?
I'm doing a reconstruction job on Howard Fowler that would make the Boulder Dam look like an egg cup.
Oh, Mary, can't we get off to the casino roof? Johnny and I have to be home by 4. Little Johnny always wakes up. Oh, he said the cutest thing the other day. He said, Dada.
When does he enter college?
They primp in front of a mirror.
No. Oh.
Where's Flora?
Oh, she's down in the bar drinking with the men.
Peggy, run down and tell her you want to get going, dear.
What's the hurry? One more snootful and Flora will float up on her own breath.
Oh, Mary, do you want to hear something about Sylvia?
No.
Well, she's going to that new psychoanalyst. You know, Dr. Sylvester?
Why, he's a dreadful face.
I know. Isn't it a scream? She's mad about him. Do you know what she pays an hour just to drool at the man?
What?
$100.
It's worth a million.
You know, Mary, you really should make it up with Sylvia. She's livid at the way you've hired her ever since Reno.
I'd rather have her for a friend than an enemy.
I wouldn't.
Flora breezes in with Peggy.
Oh, what a lovely party.
She hugs the 5 women.
Oh, isn't it wonderful to see all our lives so settled temporarily? Mary, do put that poor darling Freddy out of his misery.
I'll shoot him.
Mary, there more.
I'll get your aunt, Mary. Which one?
No, Peggy, I don't think I'll be going.
Oh, but why? Oh, Mary. You're not cross because my duck's had a wee droppy too much.
Don't be modest, Flora. Your ducky is stinko.
Oh, do come, Mary. This is really our farewell party. I'm never coming back to New York.
What's wrong with New York, Flora?
She takes her hand.
Can I trust you?
Probably not, dear. What is it? Well.
As the group huddles around Flora, she sits down.
Well, can we keep this just between the 5 of us?
She counts.
The 6 of us.
Shoot, Flora. It's a nationwide hookup.
Well, you remember the way Buck was always crooning love songs in my ear? He doesn't do it anymore.
Maybe he's saving himself for the microphone.
Oh, no, he isn't. He stays away from home most of the time and comes back smelling of some strange perfume.
Where does he say he's been?
Visiting his horse. That's why I think it's safer to keep floating around.
Oh, poor Flora.
Never mind, dear. Chin up. That's right, both of them. Yeah.
Flora shoots her a look.
Good night, Mary, dear.
Good night, Flora.
I went up against a tribe of headhunters in Africa, so I guess I can take it.
Good night, sweetheart.
Good night, precious.
Well, Mary, since you're not going, I can tell you, if you had, you'd have run right smack into Stephen and Crystal and Sylvia.
No.
Yes, they're having supper on the casino roof, Sylvia told me.
And you'd have let it happen.
Well, darling, you got to meet sometime. Why not get it over with and loosen the tension?
Well, Edith, you know Mary hates situations.
Well, I'm not so squeamish. Wait till you see the cooing fest I put on over Howard for dear, darling, little Sylvia.
She slides her finger across her throat.
Good night, Mary, darling. You know, I don't feel very much like going myself. I hate this dress. My husband says I look as though I were going to sing in it.
Good night, Mary.
Good night, Peggy.
Lots of little Johnny.
Yes.
So long, darling. Shall I spit in Crystal's eye for you? You're passing up a swell chance, honey. Where I spit, no grass grows ever.
With furs over their fancy gowns, the guests leave. As Mary goes back inside, Mrs. Moorhead comes into the bedroom, spraying perfume into the air.
What are you doing?
Fumigating.
Oh, mother.
How do you stand those dreadful women, even once a year?
An object lesson.
Would you like me to help you, ma'am?
No, thanks, Jane. You go on to bed.
Good night, ma'am.
Good night.
Good night, Mrs. Moorhead.
She picks up a book.
Oh, good book? Oh, I think so. Seems to be about love.
Mary, I wish you could find
some nice man. Have we been over that enough times, dear? I had the only one I ever wanted. It hadn't been for my pride.
Mary holds her hand over her face.
But Stephen's happy, dear. Why can't you go get him and stop
now,
him?
Mother?
Well, cheer up, Mary. Living alone has its compensations. Heaven knows it's marvelous to be able to spread out in bed like a swastika. Good night, dear.
They hug.
Good night, darling.
And don't read too long. It'll hurt your eyes. Mm-hmm.
As Mrs. Moorhead leaves, Mary walks around to the other side of the bed. She tosses off her fur robe, then pulls back the sheets and removes her shoes. Sliding under the covers, Mary props up two pillows and picks up her book from under a lamp on the bedside table. She opens it and reads. A faint smile creeps over her face.
But if you would seek only love's pleasure, then it is better for you to pass out of love's domain into the outside world, where you shall laugh, but not all of your laughter, and weep, but not all of your tears.
Little Mary opens the door, dressed in a nightgown.
Mother?
Mary.
Mother?
What's the matter, darling?
Little Mary gives her mother a hug.
May I crawl in with you tonight?
Yes, but I'm so restless, I'm going to keep you awake, honey.
Why not mine?
Come on, jump in there.
Little Mary hops under the covers.
You know, that's the only good thing about divorce. You get to sleep with your mother.
They kiss each other.
I take lipstick.
Well, I haven't washed yet. Good night, darling.
You know, you're a very sympathetic mother.
Oh, am I?
Oh, yes. So would you just scratch my back?
Mary scratches as she continues reading.
All right. Go to sleep.
I can't go to sleep, Mother.
Oh, yes, you can if you try. Good night.
No, I can't. I have such a big problem.
Have you?
Which is the most important, Mother? Truth or honor?
They're equally important, darling. One doesn't exist without the other.
Well, yes, it does. It does with Daddy. You see, tonight Daddy told me a lie.
Oh, I don't think he did, Mary.
Yes, he did. He did it for an honorable reason. But he shouldn't lie to me, Mother. Even to save her skin.
To save whose skin?
Crystal's. You see, walking home tonight, Daddy told me he was going up to Canada. Up there where you and he held your honeymoon. So I thought it was about time he stopped pretending to me that he likes Crystal.
But he does like her very much, dear.
Well, that's what he lets on. But if he'd only just break down and tell me he's going up there because he simply can't bear her another day...
Mary.
Oh, Mother, he's so miserable. He sits for hours and hours all alone in his study with his head buried in his hands while that silly thing plays solitaire with the radio on.
But, darling, why haven't you told me about Daddy before?
Because you've cried over him just about enough.
Mary hugs her daughter.
Please keep on scratching, Mother.
Oh, sorry.
I told Daddy tonight I was going to tell you.
And what did he say?
He said not to, because why would you care how he feels?
Mary's scratching slows as she looks off thoughtfully, then closes her eyes and smiles. As her countenance sobers, she looks down at her daughter.
Is Crystal happy, do you think?
I suppose she is. She's got somebody she talks to, pretty lovey-dovey, on the phone. Don't stop scratching, Mother.
Mary's mouth hangs open. She glances at her daughter, then grins.
Do you know who it is?
No, I don't know. Guess you'd have to ask Andy Sylvia. They're together all the time.
Mary's eyes widen. She tugs on a tasseled bell cord over the bed.
What are you doing, Mother?
Go to sleep, darling.
Are you going
to
get dressed, Mother?
Yes, Mary.
You forgot you were invited to a party?
Almost.
Mary throws on her robe.
Are you, Sylvia? I heard you ring.
I never felt better in my life.
Did you ring, Mary?
Yes, Jane. My new evening ride of a taxi. Don't stand there gaping. Hurry.
Mary Haynes, what is all this?
I've had 2 years to grow claws, Mother. Jungle ring.
She displays her painted nails. Now, a woman taps a cigarette on a matchbox labeled Casino Roof. She ignites a match and lights the cigarette in her mouth. It's Mary. Smiling, she lets out a puff of smoke and paces across the spacious powder room. Two women enter.
My dear, did you see those quaint types of the Vanderhuisen?
Yes, what filthy-looking outsiders. Who are they?
I wouldn't admit it if I knew, Pet.
Really? Something ought to be done to protect New York.
A maid approaches Mary.
Are you sure Mrs. Fowler, Mrs. Sylvia Fowler, didn't leave the restaurant before I came?
Oh, I'm sure, ma'am.
You do know her by sight, don't you?
Oh, sure. She's famous for the size of her tips. Not even a thin dime. But it's getting late. Maybe she's decided not to come.
Yes, maybe. Thank you.
Two women enter.
One thing to come out, but quite another to go under the table.
Yes, ma'am.
And don't think I didn't overhear that Princeton boy call me an old grizzlepuss either.
Well, you try these smelling salts, Mary.
Mary, please come back to the party. You've been in here over an hour.
Oh, have I?
Well, are you waiting for someone?
No, dear, I... Headache.
Oh, but you're not going to get rid of it in this bad air.
No pressure.
Mary tips the maid, Sadie.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
Sylvia and Crystal enter.
Oh, Stephen's in such a mood.
Excellent. How do you do?
Well, how do you do?
Sylvia and Crystal move past Mary.
Hello, Peggy.
Hello.
As Sadie takes Crystal's fur coat, Mary and Peggy head to a makeup table.
Stephen's going to give me pearls for my birthday. Isn't that sweet of him?
Oh, you have me to thank for those, dear. I told him you'd love them.
Oh, thank you, darling.
I beg your pardon.
Mary powders her face.
Come on, Mary.
I have to fix my makeup.
Well, hurry up before they come back.
Leave me alone, Peggy.
Why, Mary.
So he says, I gotta go home on Sunday. So I says, why do you got to? So he says, they always expect me home on Easter Sunday. So I said, what do they expect you to do, lay an egg?
What are you up to?
Shh. Mary spots Sylvia in her mirror.
Did I tell you I'm going to Dr. Sylvester? My dear, he keeps me for hours and never sends me a bill. He tells me the pleasure's all his.
With her gaze on Mary, Sylvia bumps into a wall, then quickly follows Crystal out.
Why, Mary, you've never been to Dr. Sylvester in your life.
Sylvia returns.
You still here, Mary?
I've got stocking trouble.
Oh, what a bore.
How have you been feeling, Mary?
Quite well.
I just heard you say you'd been to the doctor.
Jealous?
Oh, don't be silly. I'm not interested in Dr. Sylvester.
Shh,
that I can...
Dolly DePaister.
A woman enters.
Oh, hello, girls. My, but you look lovely. Got any dirt for the column?
Oh, not a thing, sweet. Not a thing.
No. Get me my coat, Sadie. I might just as well shove off. I've never seen such a clean joint.
Don't be coy, Sylvia. It's all over town what a fool you're making of yourself over Dr. Sylvester. Come on, Peggy.
Oh, no, just 1 minute. I thank you to explain that last crack.
Girls, Dolly DePaister.
You're paying him $100 an hour just to hold your hand.
Did the doctor tell you that?
Of course not. You know perfectly well the doctor never discusses his patient.
Mary, you are feeling well.
Yes, I am.
I'm going to get Nancy.
Mary Haynes, I haven't seen you for 2 years. Where do you get your information?
Where do you suppose?
Well, where? Well, where? Where?
From Crystal.
Mary walks off.
Why, are you...
Sylvia's mouth hangs open as she follows Mary across the room.
From Crystal?
Of course, by way of every saleswoman and manicurist in New York. She's now telling... She's now telling that Dr. Sylvester had to grow a Van Dyke beard so you can't see him laughing at you.
Why, the rotten little... I'll slit her throat.
Well, you wouldn't pick up with her, darling. You're the only friend she's got. Who else has she got to gossip about?
She's got Buck Winston. Why can't she tell about him?
Buck Winston?
Why, Mary Haynes, you fished that out of me.
Well, good night, girls.
Dolly, stick around.
Something's going to pop.
Good and dirty.
They grab Sylvia.
Oh, my pretty baby.
Peggy, lock the door. Sadie, have you got any place we can lock her up? In the closet.
Oh, superb.
Oh, no. Now, Mary, dear, I'll stay here.
You bet you will.
You better think of your job, my good woman.
I'm thinking of the tips you never gave me.
Oh, Mary, this isn't like you.
I haven't even started yet.
Well, whatever you're up to, I'm for it.
Peggy, don't lock the door. Winston just spilled the most terrific load of dirt.
Stephen Hayes had to knock him cold to shut his trap. And the joist full of newspaper cameras.
I knew Dolly could do it. Go out there and make an order, Peggy.
Flora enters, crying into a sheer handkerchief.
Oh, how good must have done that to me. The doctor, she called him Mr. Hyde, which was which.
Sure, now, Flora, calm down.
Of all my husbands, Buck is the first one to insult me in public.
Oh, poor Flora. What did he do?
Do? He confessed an undying love for little Crystal.
To Dolly DePeister, no less.
So that everybody in the place could hear him. Oh, the publicity. La publicité.
He even filled dates and addresses.
Don't worry, honey. I jotted them all down on Howard's share.
He said he'd be a cockeyed coyote before he'd heard an old beast like me. Get me a bromide and put some gin in it.
Crystal enters, scowling. She locks eyes with Sadie.
Hey, you! Is Mrs. Fowler in here?
And how?
Open it up, Sadie.
The maid leads Crystal to the closet.
I'll do. That's what I'll do. I'll do everybody in this place.
Sadie opens the door and Sylvia tumbles out.
It's kidnapping.
You've been shooting off your mouth, you rat.
Not a word. Not a word. Mary Haynes got it out of me.
It wasn't hard to do.
Well, you rotten little...
Just wait till I start talking about you.
You can't say a thing. Not a thing. And besides, I knew you'd lose Stephen Haynes, you shop girl.
Crystal approaches the others.
You're trying to break up my marriage, you cat. But get this straight, Mary Haynes. You can't stampede me by gossip or the drunken ravings of Buck Winston. You've got to have evidence. And Stephen is a gentleman.
He doesn't need that kind of evidence outside New York.
Stephen's fed up with you, Crystal, and your heart, you know it.
Yes, Crystal, take my advice. Put your mind on your alimony.
Alimony? With what Stephen can get on you, he won't have to give you a dime. Oh, is that so? Well, what if I don't need alimony? How would you like that?
You don't need alimony?
What are you going to use instead of it, sugar?
Buck Winston.
Oh, the increase!
You're a cowboy, and I get along great, Countess, just great. And the dough he earns on the radio is a lot more than Stephen Haynes will ever dig up. Oh, Buck and I are tickled to death to be rid of the lot of
the ingrate.
Cheer up, Flora. This is a new kind of lesson in amour.
Yeah, that's right, Flora. And see to it that your next husband doesn't become financially independent.
Buck isn't independent.
Well, hasn't he a contract with Dandy Gelatine?
No, darling. I am Dandy Gelatine. Nobody gives Buck a job on the radio, the old meanie, so I had to buy out Dandy Gelatine.
Come a tie-eye, yippee. Come a tie-eye, yippee, yippee-ay, Crystal.
You can buy it now, dear, and give Buck away with every package.
Crystal chuckles and shrugs.
Well, girls, looks like it's back to the perfume counter for me.
She pulls on her fur coat.
And by the way, there's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society, outside of a kennel. So long, ladies.
Oh, Mary. Mary, Stephen's outside. He's waiting for you. Oh, that is. He wants to know if you'll see him. Oh, Mary, will you please?
Will I? You bet I will.
Mary runs across the room.
Mary Haynes, haven't you any pride?
No pride at all. That's a luxury a woman in love can't afford.
Mary leaves the powder room. Holding her dress up from her feet, she rushes up a curving flight of stairs. At the top, Mary stops and looks ahead. Smiling joyfully, she reaches out her hands and continues forward as the picture fades to black. Now, words appear. The end. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.